It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It is Fundraising Free Radio. How cool is that? Yes, we are done with fundraising a day early for the month of July, and that means we got nothing to do here but extend thanks, and tremendous thanks they are. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly indeed to our subscribers. And that would be thanks to Pam in Washington. Thanks to Josh. Thank you to Samson. Thanks to James. And thank you to Barbara. And then after that, thanks to Charles for a half a week on me. And thanks as well to Larry, who also jumped in. Thank you very kindly with a half a show on me. That's awesome. And so we got Fundraising Free Radio, and we're going to celebrate it. Yes, yes, indeed, celebrate it. It's kind of a historic day. I don't know if it's going to come to anything, but I've been up all day since, you know, Sparrow's fart this morning, watching the proceedings in the House Judiciary and House Intelligence Committees. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we hang out. If you'd like to be part of the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany Real Time, never mind, Nancy Pelosi speaking right now, this might matter.
The Mueller investigation could not do the president's personal or business connections, and one of those connections could be to the Russians, and that's what we want to find out. So as we go to questions, I just want to say that I do believe that what we saw today was a very strong manifestation, in fact, some would even say indictment, of this administration's cone of silence in their cover-up. This is about the oath we take to protect and defend the Constitution. But some of the actions that the administration may have taken, and we'll see through our investigation, may have jeopardized our national security by strengthening Russia's hand and interfering in our elections, undermining democracy not only in our country but in other countries as well, upsetting our preeminence as a democracy in the world. This is very serious. Today was very important. Again, salute our chairman, all of our six chairmen who have been involved in this, and now we can take some questions. Okay, so who do you want to hear from first? You guys decide. Wait a minute, how about a new person? And Katie, okay, she's having a baby. We have to go there first. As a mother of five, I will.
Thank you. Madam Speaker, what you saw today, did it change whether or not you think the House of Representatives should launch impeachment proceedings?
My position has always been whatever decision we made in that regard would have to be done with our strongest possible hand, and we still have some outstanding matters in the courts. It's about the Congress, the Constitution, and the courts, and we are fighting the president in the courts.
Madam Speaker, to be clear here, isn't the issue... Madam Speaker, to be clear here...
Speaker, I'm sure you're expecting more of your members.
Excuse me?
Can I just halt? Some of your members told us over the course of today that they were expecting imminent action of some kind.
No, I don't know why they did.
What are the very
next I don't know why they thought that. But they came to me and I said, I don't know why.
The very next step is the lawsuit.
Yeah. Again, the lawsuit says, we have a number of lawsuits. You want to speak to that, Jerry? Please.
Well, the very next step, I'm not going to talk longer range, the very next step, either tomorrow or Friday, is we're going into court to enforce, to ask for the grand jury material and to enforce the subpoena against Mr. McGahn. And that's particularly important because the excuses, and I won't call them reasons, the excuses that the White House gives for McGahn not testifying, the nonsense about absolute immunity, et cetera, are the same excuses for all the other fact witnesses. And if we break that, we'll break the logjam.
Madam Speaker, what about where do you stand right now? What do you need to know on impeachment to say, okay, we don't know enough yet?
Did I just not say we're waiting to hear the from the court, so we have our subpoenas in the court for, and the subpoenas are for information. And we, and when we get that information, we
so
can
that
make
would
a judgment.
So that's a telltale sign about whether or not you.
You know, what, we have several considerations. It's about what information is there. And this isn't endless. This isn't endless. Sure. I understand that. But we have live cases in the courts. We have some that are going forward that Mr. Chairman Nadler just mentioned. It isn't endless, but would strengthen our hand to get that information. Remembering that in the Watergate was when they got the information in the tapes that broke the case. So it wasn't just about changing public opinion. That helped change public opinion. But it's not about me. It's about our caucus. It's about our country. As I say, there's a cone of silence in the White House that is engaged in a massive cover-up in the obstruction of justice. Those obstruction of justice charges, as has been demonstrated today in the hearings, could be indictable offenses by anybody else, not the President of the United States and the President when he's no longer President. But the American people, I think that if we go down that path, we should go in the strongest possible way. And that's all I'm going to say about the subject. We have our distinguished chairs here.
Let me say something. And I know Chairman Schiff and Chairman Nadler would repeat what I'm saying.
Elijah comments.
You know, the American people in the last election, even from Trump districts, said, we want to make the president accountable. A lot of people loved him. They like him, but they want to make him accountable. And we have been stonewalled with regard to getting information, access to witnesses, and getting documents. All of us have. Remember, the president said, I'm not going to give you anything, really. And so, again, the speaker is absolutely right. We're going to.
And in addition, yesterday he said he is all powerful. He can have an article too.
Significant force, but we're plowing our way through. But all of that information, piece by piece, is like a mosaic, paints the picture.
But you have long said that there's no point in moving forward with an impeachment inquiry because Republicans control the Senate. It's going to die in the Senate. Is that no longer?
I've never long said that. I have never long said that. If we have a case for impeachment, that's the place we will have to go. The fact that why I'd like it to be a strong case is because it's based on the facts and the law. That's what matters, not politics, not partisanship, just patriotism. I don't care. I'd like the Senate to be responsible and honor their oath of office to protect and defend the Constitution, to see the challenge this is to our national security, what the Russians trying to do to our country. But the stronger our case is, the worse the Senate will look for just letting the president off the hook.
Speaker Pelosi,
we have these great chairmen here who know so much. Please, I'm going to start asking them questions.
Even after these hearings, the president said he's completely exonerated.
Come on. Let me just say this. You give me the opportunity to say this, and then I invite my chairman to close. We want to have the strongest possible case to make a decision as to what path we will go down. And that is not endless in terms of time or endless in terms of the information that we want. But if it comes to a point where the cone of silence and the obstruction of justice and the cover-up in the White House prevents us from getting that information, that will not prevent us from going forward. In fact, it's even more grounds to go forward. My colleagues?
I just want to just echo that. You know, Martin Luther King said something that is in the DNA of every cell in my brain, particularly right now. He said, there comes a point when silence becomes betrayal. And we refuse to betray generations yet unborn and the American people. We're not going to betray them. And the more we're accumulating information and doing the best we can. Again, with a force as great, I don't know how many lawyers the president has, but he's got a lot of them. And they go against every single thing we do. And so, again, we're not going to betray America. We're going to do our part to make sure that we have a democracy that's intact.
Jerry?
The United States is a democracy. It must remain a democracy. A democracy acts through the elected officials with the consent of the people. The people cannot give that consent unless they know the facts. Today was a watershed day in telling the facts to the American people. With those facts, we can proceed. And we face a time of great danger. Richard Nixon said he thought that the president was a dictator. He said if the president does it, that means it's not illegal. President Trump echoed that yesterday. He said under Article 2, I, that is he, can do anything I want. That is a totalitarian picture, not a democratic picture. The United States must be saved from this. So we have to paint the picture of what's going on, a picture of someone who gladly accepted help from a foreign power interested in subverting our election, our democratic election process, and that's what it is, subverting our election process and taking the choice of our president to some extent away from the American people. That's what the Russians attempted to do, and that's what the Trump campaign welcomed them in doing. A president who engages in crimes, repeated crimes, to cover up these unpatriotic and dictatorial actions. And this cannot go on, and it's up to Congress to safeguard the Constitution, and we will do it.
As Adam I mentioned Schiff. Today during our hearing, I think the story of the 2016 election is really a story of disloyalty to country, about greed and about lies. And if there's anything that I think symbolizes those three strands of the 2016 election, it was Moscow Trump Tower. It was this massive real estate project that the president was trying to consummate while he was running for president and concealing it from the country. This, I think, demonstrated disloyalty to the country by deceiving the American people about this massive business opportunity he was seeking while he was running for president. It's certainly a vivid example of the greed of people involved with that campaign, and an ample demonstration of all the lies that permeated the campaign and its aftermath. That, to me, is the story of the 2016 election. We need to make sure that is not the story of the 2020 election. And I'll say this on the issue of impeachment, which I view in very much the same way as the speaker. Maybe I'm just an old prosecutor, but before I brought a case to indictment, I wanted to make sure that I had the strongest evidence possible. I wanted to understand my case. I wanted to be able to make my case. Now, I tried an impeachment case in the Senate about 10 years ago, a corrupt federal judge who was convicted. So I have some understanding of what it takes to get a conviction in the Senate, and I have no illusions about getting a conviction in the Senate. But there are two juries in an impeachment. There is the jury, which is the Senate, which decides removal from office, and then there is the jury that is the American people. And I'm most concerned about the jury that is the American people. And before we embark on a course as significant to the country as the impeachment of a president. I want to make sure that we can make that case to the jury of the American people.
One of the guidelines, I thank our distinguished chairman, so proud of all of them, but just following up on the last statement by Chairman Schiff, e pluribus unum, that's the guidance our founders gave us. They couldn't imagine how many we would be or how different we'd be from each other. They want us to remember that we are one. So when we go down this path, we want it to be as unifying for our country, not dividing. And that's why we want it to be the strongest possible case. Lincoln said, President Lincoln said, public sentiment is everything. Well, in order for the public to have the sentiment, the public has to know. So I hope you will be messengers of the truth to the public. We think today was really a milestone in making that that sentiment be more informed. Thank you all very much.
We have been listening.
And that's that. Maybe I'm just a goddamn neoliberal shill. But when somebody like Adam Schiff, I don't talk about this a lot, but the fact of the matter is what he said jibes with my own experience. You do not take a case to bring a charge until you have marshaled all the evidence that you have, so that when you bring the charge, you will have the strongest possible case you can make. What he was saying there is what I've been saying for a couple of months now. I know a lot of people have been saying, "Goddamn Nancy Pelosi." Well, you know, you can either shoot spitballs at the president in an impeachment case. You can impeach him for a blowjob, or in what was made abundantly apparent today, and I'm no Robert Mueller fanboy, I think everybody knows that, you can build the strongest possible case, because if you're going to try to take him down, you have to try to take him down. And you don't just take him down, you take him out. On a more humorous note, I couldn't help noting, and I don't recall seeing this before, maybe it happened, but, you know, like I said, I was up at Sparrow's Park this morning and watched it all. And I started with my little filthy morning habit. And so I watched the pampered panjandrums do their pampered panjandrum thing. I mean, there wasn't a lot of meat on the bones there. But it was fun. And I say it was fun because twice inside of an hour before the hearing was due to start, MSNBC on Morning Joe ran probably within 20 minutes of each other, two separate ads for Depends. I'm not kidding. And I looked at Agnes and I said, "You're not going to believe it. Look at this." Because I think I had already envisioned this notion. Well, I said it last night in response to something Malloy tweeted. I said, it'll be adult daycare time in the White House, and they'll have to have him in double Depends just to be safe. And then, you know, maybe because the goddess of irony listens once in a while and decides not to, you know, tweak me on my little pink tomato nose, there they were. Two ads for Depends inside of a half hour, less than an hour before the hearing began. And, of course, Nitwit Nero was tweeting for all he was worth already. So I sat and I watched. And there are things that are disturbing out of today's. And I don't mean the substance of the allegations. I mean the esoterics around it. There were highly disturbing things. One of which was that I came away from the whole thing, both sessions, morning and afternoon, convinced that Robert Mueller is not a well man. If you have been around elderly people and you have seen them lose their words, there was one particular instance under questioning when Robert Mueller, a prosecutor, a prosecutor's prosecutor, literally fumbled and could not come up with the word conspiracy. It was a question about collusion, and he couldn't, and even though it's in the report, and he had the report in front of him, he could not come up with a word conspiracy. I've mentioned it before, but having seen older people descend into senility and dementia and Alzheimer's and various other disease processes, that leapt out of the screen at me. And he was not the ramrod straight Robert Mueller that we remember from 89 previous appearances before the Congress. And he was either scared or he was not okay. They took an early break in the morning session, apparently because he needed one. And my mind was running all over the place, and it's pure speculation, so there's probably not a lot to there's nothing hard to point to. But it was there, and the stuttering and the hemming and the hawing. Left me worried. The morning session was as good as it could have been. Jerry Nadler deserves tremendous praise for being able to keep, for the most part, for being able to keep the GOP clowns in their clown car. You're never completely going to constrain the stupidity of a Matt Gaetz or a Louis Asparagus Gohmert. But they didn't get up to their clock-killing shenanigans. And that takes considerable will. The discipline on the Democratic side was nothing if not impressive. They watched the clock. They did exactly what I had predicted. They asked leading questions. They didn't do a lot of wandering off down the garden path and asking open-ended stuff that he would just summarily reject. And out of it came, he didn't sit there and read the report. But out of it came through exchanges, yes or no questions, the fact that Donald Trump, well, everything we know about Donald Trump, most particularly in the morning session, that an ex-president can be charged with crimes upon exiting the office. So there was a lot. It was information dense, and then the afternoon session was amazing, and it was amazing because of the performance of Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff seemed to establish some sort of, I'd hesitate to say simpatico, but he crafted his questions correctly.
so professionally that he was able to get Robert Mueller to say things that I think Robert Mueller was reticent to say. And then sorry, I just got my train of thought messed with. At the end of the hearing today, his summation, Chairman Schiff's summation, was actually a piece of oratory that was fit to stand alongside some of the greatest American oratory ever. And I did not expect anybody, and I hope you didn't either, to immediately jump up and say, "Hoo-wee, we're going to impeach him now, yo!" Because it's not how it works. I had a note from Steve in New York. At least for Pelosi, listening to her in this presser, this was a turning point for her. I like her responses here. I'm going to say I have seriously changed my tune on her for the better. It now officially looks like she really does have a long-term strategy. You were right to show faith in her. Adding, they're still saying their minds are not made up. This allows them to get really hardcore political about this without looking political. I think this is really good. You think I'm wrong, let me know. I'm curious to have a serious roundtable tonight about this and on Friday on the front porch. And that was something I put into the chat room a little bit ago, asking Sparky if he would be game for us to supplant prayer meeting Wednesday with a discussion, a roundtable discussion around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves about what went on today. Because, see, I sat and I watched what was actually going on, and then periodically they would break away, and I'd have to listen to the roundtables who really weren't adding much of anything to the discussion. I switched over just for a moment or two to CNN, and that was truly pitiable. And so most of the time I spent with MSNBC, just because it's usually what pops up on my screen. And for the people who work the corner of listening to Washington Journal, I can only imagine that that was a poo-flinging zoo after the monkeys have been fed nothing but prunes. Yeah, there are a lot of things. There are a lot of things to bring into this discussion. It's abundantly clear, the attack mode was on. By the way, the attack mode was on. Beavis, or Butthead, remember, I can't keep him straight, the president's elder son, Trump's elder son, was retweeting someone who suggested that Robert Mueller is mentally retarded. Matt Gaetz, whose very breath is probably 200 proof, suggested that Mueller was intellectually disheveled. Rudy Giuliani tweeted that there was no adult supervision, which I thought rather hilarious in light of the fact of how they have to manage Nitwit Nero from day to day to day. There was nothing on his schedule, by the way, today, Nitwit Nero's, up until like 3:30, 4 o'clock when he had to get in a plane to fly here, not here, here, but here to almost level west by Cold Trump Ginyistan for a Clavern rally in Wheeling, West Virginia. A very short time ago, I got a press release from the West Virginia GOP from an odious creature by the name of Melody Potter, who is the chair of the WVGOP. And she said, "It's always an honor to welcome President Trump to West Virginia. Since President Trump's election, over 20,000 jobs have been created in the Mountain State," which is, of course, an abject fucking lie. "The state's unemployment rate is the lowest we've seen in a decade. And West Virginia coal miners and energy workers are back on the job." Yeah, that's why all those Black Jewel employees got hot checks and before the company declared bankruptcy and stiffed them. "West Virginia is winning under President Trump's leadership." Hee-wee. Tell them, Melody. But given what the day has been today, well, I fully expect that it was no accident that they decided to send him to the Trumpiest state in the world, in the Union, so that he could be adored by the maggotiest of maggots in the Union. And so we might even check in with a little bit of that audio if I can find it. Because it's probably going to be... It'll either be dull as dishwater or it'll be one for the ages. They may very well move from send her back to kill her dead. And given the fact that he's scared to death of Nancy Pelosi, she intimidates him big time. I expect the madness will be... the madness will be well and truly on display with bells, whistles, rockets, and neon lights. So that's just some of the stuff that is motivating me toward a front porch conversation. I don't know, is there a front porch link up at the website? I guess we'll need one of those. Sorry about all this happening at the last minute, but I didn't really know. I really didn't know that we were going to do this until the very last moment. Steve in New York says, "If you thought North Carolina was bad, he'll turn it up to 12 tonight. James in Illinois, searching for words. I'm 64 and I find myself searching for words. I think it's my isolation. I don't talk to people, so conversation is rare. Mueller has 10 years on me. Not sure how his process works. He may be more isolated than we all imagine, choosing to communicate via memo. Not the same as verbal conversation." And by the way, it's Butthead the Elder. Eric is Beavis. yeah, that's probably best. Asa asking me if I wanted to recycle last Friday's link into the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And by the way, I don't know who besides Fox, and if even Fox, will carry Julius Geezer's diatribe this evening. So I'm not even sure. If we'll find that audio, and I don't know who all has the stomach for it. For that matter. Let's see. Let me check. David in South Carolina stands says, "Not saying, but I would not put it past some people to help Mueller's health deteriorate faster. just with the people we're dealing with, makes this not out of the realm of possibility. Little polonium tipped umbrella, courtesy of harmless, snuggleable, cuddleable, lovable Vlad Pooty Poot. Because, see, that was the one thing I think, that really stung. Because Mueller didn't make any bones about the Russian meddling. And he didn't make any bones about the fact that, yeah, it really happened. The Trump campaign wanted it to happen. They celebrated when it happened. The Russians wanted Trump in the White House. And that for Mueller, the evidence is beyond challenge. Even though we've been dealing with this for a couple of years, that still had a certain chill to it. See, once upon a time during the Cold War, we had this nightmare vision in which the world descended into a nuclear conflagration, and that somehow, possibly, there would be Soviet troops in the streets. Remember, as far as up into the 80s, Wolverines! Remember? We had Red Dawn when the commies all attacked the United States from, Cuba and North Korea and Russia and China? We still had that internalized inside us. But countries like Russia are some cheap, broke bastards. And so, consequently, they'd rather do it on the cheap. And far better to get us to do it to ourselves than for them to even make the effort. Because, from a conventional military standpoint, they really can't. There's a reason that they never did. On the other hand, if you get a stooge in the White House, and you surround him with stooges in the Congress, you've come to the same effect without wasting any money on bullets, and all you bought were some goddamn computers and servers. And all you had to do was log into social media, Facebook, Twitter, what have you. And there you were. Yeah, Putin shit himself. He's such a cowardly little turd. He shit himself at the thought of Hillary Clinton as president of the United States because he knew she wouldn't brook any bullshit and that she was fully behind the Magnitsky Act. And that she would keep twisting the screws on him. But the Russians had compromise on Trump, and they knew that they could use him. That became apparent today, if it wasn't before. And no, it wasn't necessarily the pee-pee tape. And I'm really, really getting sick and damn tired of hearing the multimillionaire for-profit media just blithely snooze past every Republican who claims that Democrats started the Fusion GPS investigation and funded from jump the Steele dossier. They know goddamn good and well that it was started by the Washington Free Beacon with Republican money. And by the way, in case you didn't know, the editor, the head guy in charge of the Washington Free Beacon is the son-in-law of William Crystal. No shit. It's all a common sewer. And no, I don't mean connoisseur. It's a common sewer. The entire Republican establishment, their pundits, you're right. The same guy
who advocated for an illegal war against the innocent people of Iraq, which took the lives of 1 million Iraqi civilians who never did a damn thing to the United States. Yeah, the guy who hooted and hollered for that is the father-in-law of the guy who runs the Washington Free Beacon, the organization that got the whole Steele dossier thing going. But you really had to be into the rot gut liquor with the swirly straw to get to some of the places that the Lulus got to today. Like, apparently, if I've gotten this put together right, it was actually Hillary who conspired with the Russians to help Trump win the election so we could attack Trump. Whew! I could start drinking now and not stop until the middle of next week and not get drunk enough to think that. I mean, I don't, but you know what I mean. So if you want to participate in a little roundtable discussion of what went on today, I encourage you to run on over to headon.live, click on the link there. That'll kick you into the Skype group where we will gather together around the old extraordinary, ordinary roundtable in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler elves, and we'll chew through this. And that's a significant fact, David, in South Carolina, Stan. The internet negated the USA's natural protections of oceans and being a hemisphere away. Isn't that novel? Isn't that interesting to ponder? Possibly ironic, insofar as the internet was conceived by inside the Defense Department in the first place. Now, there's the damn headline. Speaker Nancy Pelosi still not ready to impeach. We still have some outstanding matters in the courts. You're goddamn right there are outstanding matters in the courts. The kind of stuff that if it's part of a bill of impeachment will make it stand out in stark relief whose team Mitch McConnell is playing on. But I feel a little bit of vindication, I guess, because in shorter form, she and the three chairmen all did say the same thing that I have been saying here for months. That the straw that will break the camel's back is working its way through the court system now. The other thing that became abundantly apparent is that the next person who has to appear is going to be Don McGahn. And unless somehow or another Don McGahn can evade testimony, he's going to have to choose between Donald Trump or his law license. Because having given testimony to the Mueller team, he can't deviate it from it under oath in Congress. And what's in the Mueller report is damning, both to him and to Trump. And that all came out today, too. That Donald Trump told him to go into the public and lie. That Donald Trump told him on more than one occasion to fire Mueller. That he wanted to lean on Jefferson Davis, Beauregard, Sessions the Tud to unrecuse himself so that maybe he could go and fire Mueller. Because at base level, please recall that Donald Trump is a coward. He has always been a coward. He will always be a coward. A hero dies but once. A coward dies a thousand deaths. And his cowardice has been gnawing at him all his miserable, misbegotten, best part of him ran down Mary McLeod's leg life. I don't like headlines like Nancy Pelosi still not ready to impeach. She sounded fairly ready. What she does not have is the necessary evidence. Now let's check some other emails. Kyle says, from listening to the Republicans after the Robert Mueller testimony today, it's more clear now than any day in the Trump presidency that Hillary Clinton is going to prison because of Donald Trump committing obstruction of justice into an investigation about his obstruction of justice into possible coordination with Russia. You know. Here. Jim says, I hold my breath and will make no comment. We'll see. After all the director's been through, I think he did very well. Under hot lights and direct questions, Mueller walked a very tight rope. Hillary conspired with the Russians to lose just so she could get back at Trump later with this witch hunt investigation coup attempt. Kyle says, Bob, have you been talking to my father again? Sadly, I don't have to channel it. It's right there. I've got it sort of, it's quarantined like a computer virus in a corner of my brain. Russia, 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 says Lady B. Everyone's pushing the fact that Russia interfered in our election. I get that. That they flooded social media and right-wing radio with the message that Hillary Clinton was basically the devil, so vote for Trump. But I honestly don't understand how that was enough to get voters to pull the lever for Trump. Maybe it was the non-voters who really helped him win office. Are we that apathetic? Fuck it then, we're screwed. Well, the campaign strategy for 2020 is to find the Trump voters who couldn't be bothered to come out and vote. One of the things that became abundantly clear is that, and it's not just got on Facebook and posted ugly things about Hillary. It is that through organizations, as Randy and PA points out, like Cambridge Analytica, they were able to granularize the Facebook data so they could almost go household by household. And they could weaponize the information into one household and the next household would never see it. It's not like everybody's tuned into Channel 6 and everybody sees the ads. It was tailored down to a science, literally a science. And the Trump campaign was sharing polling data with the Russians. And the Russians, in turn, weaponized their troll farms and the Internet Research Agency, etc. And they identified Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania as the places where they could make the electoral map magic happen. And with the exception of Minnesota, which he narrowly lost, it was enough to get the job done. Because they don't count the non-voters. They count the votes. Sort of. Wisconsin had an active Republican program of voter suppression. Michigan was under the tender mercies of Rick Snyder. Pennsylvania just happens to be Pittsburgh in the west and Philly in the east and Alabama in the middle. So that job almost did itself. And there are a whole lot more mouth-walking knuckle breathers in Minnesota than we like to think about. Ask any good progressive from that state and they will tell you. So it's worth paying attention to. Steve in New York says, yeah, this does. This shows how much Trump is a coward. David in South Carolina, Stan, pointing out, poisons have always been popular weapons for Mother Russia, internally and externally. Well, when you consider that Mother Russia is the red-headed bastard child of the last gasping vestiges of the Byzantine Empire, as I pointed out in the past, that doesn't come as a surprise. Because gouging out eyes and pulling out tongues and poisoning people was pretty much something that happened on any day that ended in a Y in the Byzantine Empire from about, 700 or so up to May of 1453. And it was that culture that was passed northward and informed the evolution of culture in, among the Muscovies and the Rus. That's why the double-headed eagle of Byzantium remains one of the symbols of Mother Russia today. It's just history. Can't get around it. So now let's celebrate this midweek extra day of fundraising free radio. And again, thanks so much to everybody who made that happen. There will be a program tomorrow evening, by the way, because the brutally expensive internet bill got paid. But thanks again to Ralphs and to Larry and to Charles, who jumped in outside the subscription realm and did something that was absolutely amazing to me. It's gratifying in the extreme. Thank you. Let's run over to the old holler tree, where we've got some folks gathered around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. I don't know if Ace made up another link or not. I sent him a link, but he didn't answer me back that he was using it.
Yeah, he said, let's see. Skype link up at headon.live, so I take it that he got what you sent to him.
Because I've been in and out of the room. I got my minions over helping me do some work around the house.
Oh, how cool. Hey to the minion.
Since I had to get up at 5:30 this morning to start watching that.
My head's going to hit the pillow pretty early this evening. Even here in the same time zone it was happening in, I guess I kind of woke up like it was Christmas morning or something, just bing, 6 o'clock, and it was everything but the Captain Kangaroo theme.
Yeah, well, since he moved, I call him up. His mom has to be to work at this place. It's about a mile away from, or half a mile from my house.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll tell you what, I love that photo you posted in the chat room of the pickle. I'm calling that a pickle sub. I've never seen one of those, but damn, it looks good. I mean, that was...
Yeah, somebody... They pride themselves on... Anybody goes in there and ask him to make a sandwich, special sandwich, they will.
Yeah, this is the butcher shop near your place, yeah.
Yeah, it's just... Half a mile down the road, I ran Mason over there today, and he got a sandwich. I said, "You going to get the pickle sandwich?" No.
Yeah, and just to give a little help to the, since it was a visual in the chat room, it looks like a really huge dill pickle. That's been sliced lengthwise. I mean, it looks like it's a pickle that's made out of a zucchini that's been allowed to get way too damn big. But it's
probably.
But it's a dill pickle sliced lengthwise, and it's got, you know, deli meats and cheese and lettuce put on it. And I mean, for a minute, I kind of had to do a. It took me a second to realize that was damn pickle.
Well, it's a length of a sourdough roll, because what they do is they slice them up for sandwiches, and you got the whole length of one pickle and the whole sandwich when they make other sandwiches.
Yeah.
Like, he got a sandwich today that had a pickle, and he got roast beef and barbecue sauce and something on it.
Well, that just, once I realized it was a pickle, this is a little gross, I guess, but it's not ruined dinner gross. My salivary glands began singing an aria. Just the mere sight of a pickle, it gets me all worked up, which probably sounds kind of filthy.
He decided he wanted to barbecue for me, since his mom said she can't pick him up till like 5 or 6 o'clock. So he bought a T-bone steak for me today.
Aww.
And he's gonna cook it up here in a little bit. So I'm running around here. I gotta get him to do the barbecue right now. And then as soon as the coals are ready, he's gonna cook it up for me. Because she might be here in about an hour or so.
Oh, that's just neat. How old's your minion now?
13.
Damned well old enough to learn how to drive a grill.
He's going into the eighth grade this year, because he was held back a year, or he would be starting high school.
Wow. That's neat. Well, hopefully, we've got a little bit of a group going this evening. We've got... Who better to talk to than to start with than Billable Rick? Hey, Billable Rick, I hope you're there.
Yeah. Hey, how's it going, Bob?
Yeah, pretty good. I figure you gotta been chopping at the bit all day long.
Yeah, more or less.
I mean, this was like lawyer porn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the thing I sort of share your critique of Mueller. He seemed to me to be way older than 74. He just did not seem sharp at all. And I know that some commentators were saying that, well, maybe it's because he, as far as part two of the report, he didn't really participate in the investigation that much as to part two, the obstruction, that he knew more about the Russian interference. So, I mean, I'm not really sure what to make of that. He definitely did not seem like he was in full command of the facts. I mean, yeah, it's a long report, but you think that
I'm skeptical, for instance, of things that come from Politico. But I did read an article earlier in the day that said that there have been concerns. You know, not about his willingness to testify,
uh-huh.
But there have been concerns about his physical well-being as far back as April.
Oh, well, you never know. I mean, 74 is, you know, people die at that age, Bob. Hate to say it, but,
well,
you know.
I'm sad to announce that a 75-year-old checked out just today. And,
Is that Rutger Hauer?
Yeah, Rutger Hauer.
I saw that, yeah.
Apparently a fine actor and not just a fine actor, but a fine man as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he was active in, you know, Greenpeace and some other causes like that, I think. So, environmentalist, you know. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, see, that's the risk of having these older politicians too, Bob, you know. They could die on us.
Well, and I turned that into a thread over on Twitter, talking about the fact that this, you know, just watching him being not nearly as sharp as he used to be.
Yeah.
Was a reminder to us, you know, to please. I know I'm a partisan, but to maybe start a dialogue. I don't know if you can dialogue with a single Republican out there right now. But to start a dialogue about what we're going to do as a country if we're going to start having presidents turn 80 in office. I know I've beaten on this like a little tin drum. I know. I'm sorry.
Right.
But there is a congressional tool that is available to them via the via Section 4 of the 25th Amendment that I don't hear anybody but me ever talk about. You know, with legislation, I don't know if you've ever drafted any, but, you know, it also goes to legal drafting as well.
I've not drafted legislation, but I drafted contracts.
You try not to put extraneous language in that is not necessary.
Right.
So when you go to Section 4 of the 25th Amendment and you see that language, or such body as Congress may by law provide, that means that the people who, and if it's true for legislation or a contract or a brief, it is trebly so for a constitutional amendment, because that way, extraneous language in constitutional amendments is where madness comes from. It's how shit falls apart.
Right.
And so when they put that language in the 25th Amendment, it was meant that Congress was to have a tool by which they could do whatever was necessary to save the country from a president who had gone batshit crazy.
No doubt.
Because you don't need such other body as Congress may by law provide for a president who has a heart attack or gets cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
You need that for somebody who has been Woodrow Wilsoned, stroked out of his mind. Or James Garfielded, and shot and rendered senseless.
Right.
Or a guy like Donald Trump, who has just left the fucking arena.
Right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And the problem is you can have all of the constitutional amendments in the world, all of the legislation in the world, which, provides that Congress shall establish a body that, does this. And, that sort of vision is not what's called self-executing. In other words, Congress actually has to take an affirmative step to create such a body.
Right, and
they haven't done it.
It kind of blows my mind that amendment's been laying around in the Constitution since 1968 the latest, and nobody ever said, maybe we ought to draft up something. I don't think they put that in there for fun.
Yeah, some implementing legislation. That was done with regard to the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, the Ku Klux Klan Act of, I think, 1868 was done essentially to implement those, those Civil War amendments, post-Civil War amendments. Nothing has been done with the 25th Amendment, like you've indicated.
we all know the cautionary tales of, it takes one broken hip and then...
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, to go back to do a little bit of honor to Rutger Hauer, because it's a sci-fi movie, but I think this is one of the most beautiful monologues in film.
the imagery, the rain, the dove.
Seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears in rain. Time to die.
Roy Batty was a violent, violent character, but it's almost impossible to hear that and not get at least a little tear or something, because, like he said, all those memories gone, like tears in rain. And even that monologue, the like tears in rain monologue, is gone for Rutger Hauer now, like tears in rain. Probably doesn't fit in with the overall conversation, but that's, like I said, Otto wants to know. That's Blade Runner. Blade Runner, Otto. It's just exquisite.
Blade Runner was his best known movie, and yet it flopped commercially.
It's made its money back over history, though.
It did, but it was a flop at the time, and it became kind of a cult classic, essentially. You know,
It's a Wonderful Life flopped at the time.
Well, there you go.
Bigger now, it's an icon.
Right. Right.
Hey, Steve.
On that note, so did Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I remember Ghostbusters. You're right, Megan. Ghostbusters got panned.
Yeah, it did. It wasn't until it came out later on VHS that it became popular.
Oh, and I owe an apology to Matt in San Francisco. Subject line, hockey puck. Just for me, can I get a warning before the pickle jokes? It's difficult to clean off the water from my window after a full-on spit take. So,
oh God!
That one's on me. And even that, in context, begins to seem a little filthy. Matt continues, seriously. Is there a way, since the amendment was passed to abolish slavery, isn't there an angle to play to get rid of the Electoral College, since it's in part based on the 3/5 of a person? It's a novel idea, but no, not really. You're gonna have to get rid of it. And that's one of those things. Every time I hear a politician say, "We're going to have to get rid of the Electoral College," I think, well,
amend the Constitution, which is no easy task.
Yeah, it's no easy task. So it's a job sooner. Better sooner rather than later. And so, consequently, I wonder. Well, there's people who's been in the House and the Senate for rather a while. Where's that amendment getting rid of the Electoral College? Is that something just dawned on us? Because I've been kind of wondering about that since, 2000. And then there's Dr. Bill, who has never stopped wondering about it. And I think it was in yesterday's program that he explained the story of the screwing of Tilden. And in the screwing of Tilden, moreover, the screwing of every recently freed every African-American in the country. Because Tilden won the popular vote, and Tilden was one Electoral College vote short of being president, and they went into a smoke-filled room, they came out, and guess what? Rutherford B. Hayes became the president of the United States at the connivance of the South, with the understanding there were promises made. See, the South promised that it would
forever recognized the constitutional and civil rights of what were referred to as freedmen. And the Union, or the North, the rest of the country, agreed to end Reconstruction and withdraw troops from the South. Well, the withdrawal of the troops from the South was accomplished, honoring the bargain. But the South then immediately set about setting up Jim Crow. And very few people, and I don't mean this in the Donald Trump way, when Donald Trump says very few people know, he means I just found out 10 minutes ago. Very few people know that particularly odious and obnoxious little chunk of American history. And so we got George W. Bush because of the Electoral College. And you would think that some Democrat over the course of the last 20 years might have thought to, just maybe in between going and picking up the dry cleaning and going down and playing some naked handball in the congressional gym, it might have dawned on him, maybe I should file that constitutional amendment to ditch the Electoral College. But no, curiously, that has not happened.
The thing about that, Bob, about abolishing Electoral College, the way the mainstream media portrays it is that's like a radical idea that only the very left of the left wing is proposing, and very few American, low percentage of the American people, support it.
Remember. Every time the Electoral College has put a president in over the popular vote, it has operated to the benefit of a Republican. Rutherford B. Hayes was a Republican. George W. Bush was a Republican.
There's only one exception to that,
Trump,
and I can't think of
it. There's no exception. Rutherford B. Hayes was a Republican. George W. Bush was a Republican. Donald Trump was a Republican. And that having been said, what I was getting at is if the day should ever dawn when a Democrat becomes president by operation of the Electoral College and has lost the popular vote, there will be 72 amendments to the Constitution filed by the Republican Party the next goddamn day to get rid of it because freedom is being stole from us.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Any doubts?
No.
No. Nope.
Oh, by the way, back to flopping movies. Steve in New York reminds us the Big Lebowski flopped. And Robert in Australia says Blade Runner flopped thanks to studio interference. They added narration, removed vital scenes, and then added a happy ending. It was years before the original cut was released. And that's absolutely the truth. So it had help. It didn't jump, it was pushed. I love the way these conversations work out. James in Illinois says, I knowed it, the Tilden Hayes deal. Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't say everybody, I just said a lot of people. I mean, if you asked... If I walked down into, downtown Bug Tussle... And I say, who was Tilden? They'll go, don't he play wide receiver for the Mountaineers? Yeah, maybe.
Was that, that wasn't known as the Great Compromise. I think that relates to admitting a slave state and a union state.
That's the Missouri Compromise.
Yeah, that's the Missouri Compromise, yeah.
The Great Compromise is a song by John Prine.
Okay, well, there you go. I haven't seen him yet. One of these days. Well, I better be careful, though.
Yeah, you don't get to go see John Prine. I'm sorry, Rick. You just don't.
I don't want to ruin it for everybody else.
Yeah,
right?
just keep listening to his recordings.
There you go. Well, I have seen John Mayall twice, and he's still okay.
A note from Lady B. I love Rutger Hauer. Brilliant actor, could really deliver. Good writing, good actor, can create a supernova of movie brilliance. Rutger acted that scene as if he wrote those words himself, and he did. They scripted something else, and he said, this sucks. And he came up with that by himself. That's what every writer craves.
Yeah.
For someone to bring their words to life. Bob, I don't know if you're an actor, but you give my words life. Congrats on a fundraising-free rest of the month. You deserve it. I'm so thrilled. Not just the ordinary 5 days. We get 6 days to do that, and it just tickles me pink. Wow. Thank you, Lady B. I pursued a master's in theater for a while before I ran away to Atlanta to join the circus. I mean, CNN.
I'll drink a cup of coffee to the fundraising free July. That's wonderful. It's so much more fun not to have to interrupt the flow.
Yeah.
I was going to throw out one more thing about Rutger Hauer that I learned today. There was a real steamy movie he was in with another, I think, a Dutch actress called Turkish Delight.
Yep. That was a Paul Verhoeven film. And out of that, Paul Verhoeven almost cast him in the title role of the first RoboCop.
Oh, okay.
But the one film, and it was an HBO film. It wasn't a theater film. It wasn't a theatrical release, if I recall correctly. I loved him in Fatherland. It's an alternate universe film in which the Second World War ends without the atomic bombing of Japan. In a way, it presages the man in the high castle without all the goofiness.
Right.
And so Germany is in control of Western Europe, and nobody knows about the Holocaust. And Rutger Hauer plays an SS officer who accidentally stumbles on to the minutes of the Wannsee meeting. And it's it's riveting, absolutely riveting.
I'll have to check that out as well.
By the way, a note coming in from before we get too shallow and pop culturally. A note coming in from David in South Carolina, Stan. Subject line: DOJ rule. If a Democrat wins the 2020 presidential election, lame duck Donald Trump and Barr will remove that DOJ rule about indicting a sitting president. Maybe, possibly. But I'd like to look at it from the other end of the stick and say that if we get a Democratic president in, now, this is not a question. The only way we're ever going to find out about this is if some ordinary, well-informed citizen gets to ask the question at some point, because I'm sure it would be censored out of any of the pageants. But the Democratic candidates need to be asked, how many of you will support getting rid of the OLC rule that says the President of the United States is above the law?
Well, that's crazy. Who wouldn't?
Somebody who was going to be President of the United States and would kind of like to be above the law.
Trump and one of his buddies. Somebody keeps calling me.
You know.
I think it's Darlene. Hold on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The weird thing about this, Bob, is that was a creation, I think, of Attorney General John Mitchell.
Yeah, it's not post Nixon, it's not post Watergate, it's kind of pre Watergate, because it had to do, if I understand the history correctly, they wanted to know could Spiro T. Agnew be impeached, and the answer was yes, and then they took it a step further and said, but the president can't.
Right. Yeah. How is that unconstitutional? Mueller said that to indict a sitting president, according to the OLC guidance, would be unconstitutional. I mean, how can you say that without any determination by any court as to the validity of that OLC guidance? I mean, you know, part of the problem too, Bob, is he was operating under rules that made him a Justice Department employee. And one thing Justice Department employees have to do is they have to follow, you know, all of the rules and regulations of Department of Justice, of which that OLC guidance is one.
So what happens if you violate it? You get fired. It's not like you go to prison, right?
Right. You would get fired. It would be considered a fireable offense. He probably didn't want to get fired. He probably thought that would be more harmful than if he.
Yeah, because that would actually be fired for cause, right. And there would be no way that you could complain that Trump was obstructing justice in so doing.
Right. Well, exactly.
We've had some really awful presidents: Andrew Jackson, Herbert Hoover. You think Trump's going to top this list, or?
Oh, hell yeah.
He's trying. Definitely. Oh, my God. He's like king of the worst.
No,
he's going to look great.
He's going to make, there are already people out there who think he makes George W. Bush look like George W. Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob.
Yes, Parky.
I posted the right link that we're using on your Facebook page and on the Horn Facebook page. All I could do, I don't know if Asa got the right one for me or not. He never answered me back.
Yeah, he said he recycled the old link from last week, so that may be the problem.
I had to go into the chat room and use the link that was posted in the chat room to get in the right call and then add Irwin. Because
I know because I corrected it with Steve and posted it in the chat.
Because I was posting the wrong link at first, you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to add Darlene now, but she's not. Hold on. She's not on my contacts. Hold on.
So Bob, here's my take on the proceedings today. I don't know if they're going to make a damn bit of difference. I'm sorry. Call me cynical, but
I've always got that nagging feeling in the back of my head that this is a popcorn fart.
Yeah, well, it's political theater.
And I was so anxious to hear Bob because usually, he'll grab my head and put it back.
Darlene, you there?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
You guys know how to add people to a call on Skype, right?
Yeah, I think I'm the one who actually just added Darlene.
There we go.
Oh, okay.
Darlene, you there? Yes, I am. Thank you. Wonderful. Thank you. You guys know how to add people to a call on Skype, right?
Yeah, I think.
Hey, Darlene, you're going to have to.
30 seconds delay.
Sorry, I got it.
Okay, thank you.
I was wondering what that echo was.
Sorry.
So what do other folks think about these hearings? Are they going to make any difference at all or not?
That's what I'm wondering.
I'm trying to understand what alternate reality Republicans live in because I think part of what Mueller, what made him appear slow and like he had, like, I don't know, stupefied was, Matt Gaetz and Jim Jordan and the dude that wanted to parse over what the word exonerate meant.
Yeah.
And I'd be like sitting there looking like a dumbass too. Like, what the hell are y'all talking about? I'm looking at my TV like, what on earth? They're acting like Hillary Clinton was the president.
That's what the meaning of the word is.
Yeah, right.
Well,
dude that brought the law books from the law school and just dumped them on the desk, I'm like, dude, where are you going with that?
Oh, my favorite was the little dude in this morning who said, I was a JAG Corps lawyer who prosecuted the butcher of Fallujah. And I would have gotten in my car and started driving to D.C. just to hold up a sign saying, thank you, Bob, if Mueller would have looked at him and said, well, that's great for you, son. You want a cookie?
Bob, may I ask you a question?
Yes, I might even answer.
Does this give you optimism?
Yes.
Sincere optimism?
I try not to traffic in insincere optimism.
I know, but hear me out. I mean, yeah, we impeach him, and then the Senate acquits him, and then we're right back to this quandary we talked about.
No. This is the only concern here is the House. The House is in charge. It is a constitutional right that is not afforded to the Senate or to the or to the Article III courts or to the several states. Only the House can do impeachment. And if the House embarks upon impeachment, they cannot be concerned with what happens in the Senate. That's a political calculation for the people who get millions of dollars to sit in front of TV cameras and be wrong. Okay? Go back to that clip I played a couple of weeks ago from Barbara Jordan. She says exactly that. She says, we have a job to do, and what the Senate's going to do cannot be a part of our calculation. We are not sworn to think for the Senate. We are sworn to uphold the Constitution in the House of Representatives. And so I think that's where we are right now. Maybe I'm a goddamn neoliberal shill for saying this, but like I said at the top of the program, I am still of the opinion that it is that the cake is not baked yet.
It could be a jar loosener.
Or how about the opinion is just do the right thing?
Well, but if you do the right thing, if there's a difference when you're dealing with presidential impeachment, Steve, between doing the right thing with a straw and a spitball versus doing the right thing with a double-bitted axe.
And Nancy, she's loading up.
Nancy wants the axe.
They're all loading up.
Yeah.
That presser was, they're loading the bullets in the gun.
She knows what she's doing.
We're just waiting on the manufacturer.
She is not going to bring a pea shooter to a gunfight.
This is Erwin. Say,
hey, Erwin.
Hey, Erwin.
Hey, what's up, Erwin?
I have one complaint. I have right-wingers that I communicate with on Facebook, and they keep on saying most of them now claim that they're independents. They're former Republicans, but they claim to be independents now. And they say that both parties aren't doing anything. And I keep
That's
on
just
telling
lazy.
Them, I keep on telling them about all the things that the House has done, and Mitch McConnell isn't doing anything. And, you know, I tried to find data on the bills that have come out on the internet. I had a hard time finding what has been done, you know. I think.
Well, I mean, you can always go to the Library of Congress. You can go to Congress. You can go to thomas.gov, and it'll be there. But the number is in excess of 350 now. And
wow.
for the House to pass 350 bills in the space of a little more than 6 months' time is extraordinary. They're doing their job.
Well, they have those bills planned.
It's just that I think it's hard to find for an ordinary person. You know, that's the only thing I have to say about it. You know?
Well, if you go to House.gov and Senate.gov, don't they have to list all the bills that were voted on?
Yeah, you can find them, but you know, it should pay the money for Google so that you put in something and it's the first thing that comes up. You know, like the right wing would do. I mean, it's I don't know. That's just my opinion.
Well, I'll just opine. Erwin, you say you've got some people you communicate who are right wingers. I don't do that anymore. They're not allowed on this program, and I generally don't speak to them in real life because I don't like feeling like there are you know, flesh eating bacteria in my brain from having to deal with them.
Yeah, I understand.
Today's hearing. With what the Republicans had to say, I mean, who can communicate with them anymore? They're living in an alternate universe.
Well, whoever does not have to communicate with these guys should consider yourself fortunate, because in day-to-day life, especially if you got a job and you're out there in the real world, you have to. There's no way around it.
Oh, I was calling my mother today, and she said she had to walk into her office and shut the door because they had they turn on the radio of the hearings, and she works with a bunch of Trump supporters, and they were just going on and on about how this whole thing exonerated Trump. And she like, my mom doesn't stay quiet, but
Nancy,
there's a level where she just get, there's no reasoning with these people. They're just going to think what they're going to think.
And I'm sorry to step on you, but what I meant to say is, especially if you're in sales, I mean, you have to keep your political opinion close to your chest, or it could take money out of your pocket.
Mm-hmm. Same with law as well. You got to be careful.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that goes back to, and I understand sales, marketing. You know, that's why companies that manufacture products that everybody uses don't, you know, they've adopted, because of the toxicity of white wing radio, they've adopted a policy of, we're not going to advertise on any of it. And it hurt our side more than it hurt the other, as far as the commercial stuff is concerned. I did want to mention that where'd it go? I'm having a Mueller moment.
Oh, it's me.
That's a new thing now.
That's me.
I like to think a Mueller moment was more because he had so much stuff to remember as opposed to a nothing between the ears.
He also looked really wiped out. I don't think he slept a wink last night.
Nope, I don't think he did either.
And somebody with, you know, at his age, I don't want to say anything negative about that because I love septuagenarians, sexagenarians, octogenarians, totally fine with them. But I would think he's not as sharp if he didn't sleep. And he's complained in the past, even when he was a younger man, that he loses sleep over this stuff.
He was gray. I don't mean his hair. He was of a skin color that is referred to as sallow, and we generally see people as being physically unwell when they look like he looked today. I mean, I don't want to. Again, it's the purest and grossest speculation. He looked like a guy who's not long for this planet.
Well, that's heartbreaking to hear that, but
That's just me saying it. I wonder what's harder, sitting there being questioned in Congress or pulling an 8-hour shift on your feet at McDonald's.
Well, look, you know, you have to figure too. I mean, he's being compared to when he was much younger. And I don't know about you, I'm 50, I just turned 54, and there's a lot of shit I don't want to deal with work-wise that I was dealing with 20-some-odd years ago. My guess is he's not in it, he probably has lost that will to really fight, but I think that he did achieve what he wanted to achieve, which was walking away, making sure both sides were unhappy about something, which is what lawyers do. So I think he did that. On the flip side, I agree 100%. I was really shocked. I was stunned, surprised when he could not remember the word conspiracy.
That was the moment.
And yeah, and it was like he called it a term, and the T-E-R-M. And then the Democrat who was questioning him said, kind of covered a little bit, said, well, I'll help you if you help me. And I'm thinking that that could be one of the reasons why maybe he was so reluctant to testify when all of his colleagues said this should be normal for him to want to testify. He may be very aware of his, that he's not as much on the ball as he used to be. And he had a highly, highly protective group of men behind him and next to him. And I don't think that was no accident.
Well, he had an assistant there next to him who was attacked this morning by Nitwit Nero, who was helping him, pull pages and everything.
Aaron Zebley.
For a minute there, I thought...
Was Aaron Zebley on his right or left?
It was to his left. He was off screen.
Quarles was the guy behind him that works with him, or worked with him. It's Wilmer Hale, because they all...
The white-haired guy with the white mustache?
Yes.
Who was the guy who looked like Steve Scalise?
Yeah, who was that guy?
I don't know who that was, but Mark Meadows was sitting in behind, too, which was interesting that he wanted to get his mug in there. But, these are all of his close associates from when he was at the FBI and also when he was at Wilmer Hale. And I'm wondering if there was the reason there was so much negotiations for him to testify had a lot to do with, that he's not as on the ball as he used to be, and they want to be sure that he's somehow protected and that he got breaks and things like that.
And it was the breaks thing that kind of tipped me off early on. to the idea that he may not be completely okay.
He didn't look.
Who's in control? Who's in control of the brakes?
The chair.
The
chairman, right?
So somebody who is talking to the chair from his group.
Oh, they probably had hand signs set up.
Well, yeah, Quarles did that. Didn't you see Quarles put the five fingers up at one point?
Yeah.
Like either was.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, need five minutes.
Or it was in reference to, I don't know if it was Louis Gohmert or saying, you know, 5 minutes is up soon because Gohmert was going after him as he typically does. Or he was saying, we need our 5 minute break. I don't necessarily think that's too off considering that he's 74 years old. I mean, but I think they were treating him with, you know, they were being very careful to not upset him too much.
Well, to be honest, like, I'm not all that old. I'm 40, and it was exhausting me.
You're a baby.
Just trying to keep up with all that stuff that they were doing.
Yeah.
And not only that, I mean, for a 74-year-old man, and he was getting it from all sides today, and the Republicans, I'm sorry, they were just off in outer space. It was like they stepped up the bat. Instead of batting, they were running around the backstop.
I agree. I think they're... I mean, something that Bob has always said that always stuck in my head is usually the simplest explanation is usually the right one. So I guess the simplest explanation is that he's unwell. I don't want to think that, but, you know, you can make a lot of excuses as to why, you know, there are other explanations for it. But, you know, that he's unwell could be the simplest explanation. You know, and you figure after 2 years, the amount of stress involved, I don't think he anticipated. I think he stepped his foot in it and he didn't realize what he was stepping into, because when he was asked about this, why he did this, he said, well, it was a challenge and there were a lot of reasons. I think he got more than he bargained for with this.
I think there's some of that, but the other part of it, and this is the part where I'm still disappointed in him. What in the hell?
That was definitely not a cowbell, Bob.
No. I don't think the French fries are ready either. But hell, I hear Siri come on all over TV programs now. It's like they don't even bother to mute their phones. Okay, I'm feeding back through somebody.
I hope it's not me. I don't think it is.
No, but I'm still a little disappointed in him.
Yeah.
Because there's something about.
I hope it's not me. I don't think it is. Oh, yeah.
I wonder who that is.
That was me talking, but that was a feedback. That's a delay.
That's a loop back.
That's Joe. I've been muting him.
Oh, okay. Joe, you gotta turn your speakers off or use headphones or something. Yeah, but what I'm getting at is, and I use these analogies. If your house is on fire and you go to your neighbor and you say, my house is on fire, could you call the fire department for me? And your neighbor says, well, you know, I'm an institutionalist, and it would not be proper for me to call the fire department on a fire at your house. Well, okay, I'll go call the fire. Can you hold the hose for me for a minute, Bob? Well, no, you see, I don't perceive that to be my role, holding the fire hose while your house is on fire. Because, see, the country is on fire.
Yes, yeah.
The Constitution is itself burning, and so what Rick said, I think, about the OLC guidance is very much well, it's relevant.
Yeah, and you also have to figure too. I disagree that Mueller when he said it's unconstitutional to indict a sitting president. That's never been vetted.
It's never been. It's never even been before the court.
Right.
But the thing is, okay. So if he had done anything while the investigation was still going on and he was still the special counsel, He could have been fired for cause, and that would have been disastrous for whatever it is we hope we found out. But he's not that anymore. And I'm not saying that I wanted him to stand there and say, you know, you dirty bastards need to impeach this guy. No. That would have been, that probably would have been worse. But on the other hand, he could have been more forthcoming. At one point in time, he was asked to read a portion of his report. And out of some delicate fear would be seen on TV saying Donald Trump lied, or whatever it was he was asked to read, he said, no, I'll let you read it.
And well, fear is the right word, because I think that he was afraid. I think, you know, maybe when he was a younger man, that fear wasn't there. But as an older person who's probably concerned about his legacy, and that brings me to the book Fear, which I sent you. I mentioned in the email to you, Bob, before I joined the chat. In the book Fear, John Dowd was quoted as saying, and again, consider the source, it was John Dowd who was representing Trump at the time. He said that whenever he met with, well, at least one time that he met with Robert Mueller and Quarles, the guy with the mustache and the white mustache and the hair, white hair sitting behind him, that he felt that Robert Mueller had no idea what was really going on with the investigation. And I think Mueller is afraid to piss off the DOJ at this point in his life. I don't think he wants to fight or to be sued. Well,
but see, there, Darlene, and not to disagree,
right.
That was the one thing that kept just gnawing at me. The fact that DOJ guidance that came out, that letter, it didn't come out of nowhere. It happened because he asked for it. He wanted them to fence him in.
Exactly. And also, I thought it was interesting his response concerning the 1,000 prosecutors who signed that letter that said anyone else would have been indicted under the evidence he presented in his report. And it was interesting that Robert Mueller said they had a different case. That was an interesting response.
He dropped anvil-sized hints, I think, in a very oblique way. Like Bob said, he could have been more forthright, but I think he's been kind of lobbing sideballs at Congress saying, look, I've done my job, y'all need to do yours. But he also stated there were a lot of didn't he say he passed information on to other investigators and they were pursuing cases?
Yes. Yeah.
And there are some cases ongoing. I mean, Roger Stone is one of them. We don't know what's happening in the Southern District of New York.
What is the FBI investigating? Didn't he say they were still investigating?
Oh, yeah, because Bill Barr, Bill Barr, the prosecution, commanded the FBI to investigate why the FBI, and again, the word was used repeatedly, spied on Carter Page. There was no spying. It is not spying.
If it's
the U.S. intelligence apparatus operating against its investigation. I mean,
into criminal activity.
Yeah, if you're charged with burglarizing a house and the cops investigate you for that burglary, they're not spying on you.
They only use spying because it was on a fellow Republican.
Spying is a term that's the little word we use for the French word espionage.
It is loaded.
That's interstate.
You know what though, with Robert Mueller, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. I hate when that happens.
No,
that was a Mueller moment.
Just wanting to say, several of us here have been in the government. When you're in the government, I think you use that DOJ or that decision as kind of a shield to try to stay bipartisan. That's what I think he would do.
Yeah, now I remember what I was going to say. I think too that again, I think we can kind of surmise that Robert Mueller isn't really completely in charge. Because even like when Bill Barr said, oh, the letter sounds snitty, I don't think he wrote it. So my guess is he didn't write that letter, the letter that was in response to Bill Barr's four pager that said, where he talked about the public confusion. So I'm thinking that his request to the DOJ for parameters on in terms of testifying may not have actually come from Mueller. It may have come from his team. And in my opinion, as an attorney would be, you know, because I did practice law for 5 years, would probably be a prudent thing to do. And my guess is he's got other individuals there who are probably writing stuff for him, including his statement on May 29th. And that he may be having a lot of people who are handling things for him that he's just signing off on.
Yeah, that's probably correct.
I have to wonder how much.
It was such a massive investigation. Mm. I heard Preet Bharara talk about that in covering the after the hearings, and he basically. You know, he was asked by someone, well, when you were, you know, the U.S. attorney for SDNY, did you know the details of each and every case in your office? And obviously, you know, he didn't. There's just no way to possibly do it. What you do in that situation is you delegate. And Mueller's not going to necessarily know in detail about each and every interview of each and every witness, you know, in the, in the report.
Exactly, Rick, and this was a massive...
Yeah, and Republicans were gunning for him to trip up on his own report. And I think that's where a lot of his hesitation came from, too.
Exactly. I mean, Bob is right, too, because basically this, the problem is this is more ammunition for Trump and Beavis and Butthead and all of his other grifters to try to undercut the report by saying that Mueller is somehow not... you know, that he's not with it and he doesn't know what he's talking about, that kind of thing. It gives them more ammunition, unfortunately, because they're going to twist it. They're going to capitalize on anything because they're freaked out and they're grasping.
They're just now making stuff up. So I'm wondering how much of that is going into Mueller's behavior and his team.
Well, there were
trying to dodge the attack.
There were a couple of moments. One of which was, when he said, you know, I'm not going into that. And the answer was, well, you know, we didn't get the unredacted report. Maybe we should. And those were just little ticklers to where this is going to be. Again, this is not a simple red car, blue car, rear-ender case. And even those can get complicated. This is a massive conspiracy at the highest levels of government.
Yes.
Yep.
And so I wish there was some way to make it go faster. If only Perry Mason had been there today, somebody may have stood up at the back of the room and said, God damn it, yes, I'm guilty. But that's TV and Hollywood. That's not the real world of legal and judicial process. So
I think too many people expected that, Bob. I think that's a problem.
Well, yeah, because too many people get their idea of what the law is about by watching fucking TV.
Yeah.
But what's going to happen? I mean, you mentioned John Dowd. That sucker needs to testify.
Oh, yeah.
Don McGahn.
MSNBC just put up like a statement from Jay Sekulow. Like, I think it was after the morning hearing, and Jay Sekulow was just on, he was in outer space, and he's like, oh, well, the American public needs to consider the case closed. And I'm like, no, I think a whole bunch of people after this need to start testifying before Congress.
Right.
This is what I meant when I say it's a jar loosener. I think this is the start. This ain't the end of anything. Maybe the end of Mueller's part in it.
But at least he got up there and he honored the subpoena when nobody else in the administration has done that. So
yeah, I don't know if he was even subpoenaed.
He was subpoenaed, Rick.
I think that whole thing was a dance to make it look like two Republicans. I think he's just trying to dodge a lot of crap from them.
Well, actually, that's a good point, Rick, because Adam Schiff made it sound like he came to the intelligence hearing on his own volition, but it sounds like he had to be subpoenaed for the judiciary hearing. So I would like to know, I would like that cleared up, because he clearly was subpoenaed for the judiciary hearing, but it sounds like Schiff's implied that he came on his own volition. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I wonder what happened there. Yeah, that's a good point.
Did he have to be subpoenaed?
No,
you don't have to be, but sometimes you ask for a subpoena to give yourself protection, like if you expect to be sued by someone else, if you give testimony, that type of thing. You want to have a subpoena for your protection. That's called like a friendly subpoena, essentially. It's still a subpoena.
Okay, so he was still ordered to testify today.
And there was some sense to that, because the morning hearing was more about volume two, whereas the afternoon hearing had a much more, shall we say, Cyrillic flavor to it. And
Cyrillic flavor?
Yes.
Cyrillic. I looked that up. I learned all my new words from Bob.
Don't trust me. I make them up all
Bob
the time.
Bob has the best words, as Trump once said.
There's some importance to that point though, because I honestly think that Mueller cared more about the Russian aspect of it, because as he said, I fear that foreign powers meddling in our elections are going to be the new normal.
I agree 100%.
He was trying to stress that point.
He may be that institutionalist who says, well, you know, presidents come and go. We can survive 4 or 8 years of a bad president. We cannot withstand a perpetual attack on our electoral process.
You know, I agree 100%, Bob. I think that was Robert Mueller's main thing. I think he took the special counsel because his main concern was what was going on with the Russian interference. I think I don't think he really cared much about the obstruction. I mean, I think he was worried that it would stop his role, but I think his whole idea was to delve down into this, because I think he misses being FBI director, and I think that this was something that he could kind of circle back to as FBI director, because he was always talking about cybersecurity issues, Russian and Chinese interference potentially in our grid and other things, because he did testify years ago that he felt that cyber warfare wouldn't replace terrorism. And I think that was his main concern, and he was more open about that.
And I think he was trying to issue a heavy warning to us,
yes,
that it, or to Congress, said if you do not get behind this now, 2020 is going to be as much a shit show as 2016 was. I think you're right. I think he was stressing that.
It already is. 2018 was as much a shit show as 2016.
Well, it goes back to.
But at least we flipped the house on that.
Bob is saying about the turnout needs to be 70%. The turnout needs to be 70%. Like I think that what happened in with Obama's second term is that he inspired people to turn out in sufficient numbers where it overrode the shenanigans. And we need that in 2020 desperately, because now Trump has tremendous incentive, as does Vladimir Putin, to see Trump back in office in 2020. Because shockingly, and I don't understand this with Robert Mueller, Robert Mueller seemed totally clueless about the 5-year statute of limitations on indicting Trump once he leaves office,
especially with regard to the skullduggery with Cohen and the hush money.
I was shocked that he seemed totally unaware of that 5-year statute of limitations. That, you know, if Trump wins a second term, he's clear and golden. So there is tremendous incentive for him to cheat and to try to steal a second term.
Well,
and Mueller was clueless about that.
Yeah, I mean,
he stole the Republican first time. Steal anyway, so.
Say that again.
I said he's a Republican. He'll steal and cheat.
Right. But I was shocked that Mueller did not seem to be aware of the 5-year statute of limitations. Bob, did you notice that?
Yeah, I did. I did. And
I was shocked.
It was like he just, you know, hadn't pondered it or was.
Right. It was like willful ignorance of it. And I think he's engaged in willful ignorance on a lot of things. And that might be his way of trying to stay as neutral and apolitical as possible.
Well, I think that's one of the requirements to be a Republican, willful ignorance. I mean, how else do you explain the, you know, their thought patterns and belief system, you know?
Good one. That deserves a cowbell.
Oh. There you go. That's it. Rick wins.
Hey, thanks.
For you.
But, you know, to kind of circle back to one of the topics that we just had a little while ago, yeah, there is a lot more to be done. There's a hell of a lot of unobeyed subpoenas. I should say flouted subpoenas and lots of enforcement that needs to be done in the courts.
You know, precious little
get its evidence.
Precious little Hopi Hicks has problems.
Yeah, right.
Turns out
she get caught in a lie.
Yeah, she's stone cold busted and probably lied to Congress. I saw breaking news a little bit ago. The DOJ has declined to prosecute Barr and I forget who else for contempt, of course.
Oh, yes.
Barr declines to prosecute Barr. Yes.
That's the true part of prosecution.
I need to go back to a note from Lady B from a little bit ago.
So Rick, is that the Foo Bar?
The Foo Bar, there you go. That's
Foo Bar.
Nice play.
Yeah, that's nice the Foo Bar. That's the Foo Bar to America. Lady B wrote a little bit ago, at the risk of pissing y'all off, and I have to address that real quick, nobody here gets pissed off. Not at all. This is, you know, I'll reiterate, as long as we assume good faith on the part of all the participants of the conversation, we can talk about anything. People only get pissed off when they're not, it's like, you know, I can never assume good faith on the part of a maggot, because their only purpose is in defending Donald Trump no matter what, because they're so deeply invested that wherever he goes, they have to go with him now. But anyway, Lady B says, at the risk of pissing y'all off, what difference does it make if Mueller is unwell? If anything, it gives more fodder to the Republicans to use it against him. And I think that's exactly what the point is. What did the Dems want or expect him to say? Would he have said it if he were more coherent? I think he might have been a little bit better than he was. He might not have appeared so, I hate to use the word doddery, but it was like he was sliding down into his chair.
Bob, you don't think he was putting on a Ronald Reagan act, do you?
No. That would have all been... Well, Nancy, I can't remember if ketchup is a vegetable.
Hey, Bob, he's always slunk down in his chair. That's nothing new.
Hey, Bob,
she's always done that. That's who he is.
You stole Kim Jong-un's best words.
Oh, jeez.
Goddard.
Meanwhile, there's the multimillionaire for-profit media.
Oh God!
Best represented.
Chuck Todd.
No, best represented by the New York Times. I screen capped this because it was so goddamn disgusting.
Oh jeez! If it's what I think it is, Bob, I think I read it on your Twitter earlier today.
It is. Trip Gabriel tweets. New York Times colleagues reacts to Mueller. Adam Goldman.
So far, this hearing is not revealing new ground. By tomorrow, it could be forgotten in this frenetic news cycle.
Maggie Haberman replies, Adam, I think you're being generous with by tomorrow.
They really said it was going to be done by tomorrow.
By tomorrow, it could be forgotten in this frenetic news cycle.
Adam, I think you're being generous with by tomorrow. Maggie's already forgotten it.
God, well, that's an NYT for you.
Meanwhile, note coming in from Kitty in Boston. What frustrated me the most during both hearings was that Dems did not take every opportunity to point out that Mueller is a Republican, especially when Republican clowns were yammering on about Mueller's team being a bunch of hardened Democrats.
Wait a minute. Didn't they do that later on in the hearings?
Well, it was done once.
Did Schiff point that out?
It was done once or twice, but it was not hammered home so that the little old lady in Dubuque would be dreaming about it tonight. I think that's what Kitty's getting at, because you've got to repeat things over and over and over for the perennial attention deficit disorder American people to actually get it through their noggins.
I agree, but I think the Dems were trying to do a counter representation to the Republicans screaming and yelling and throwing tantrums and just misrepresenting facts, and that was a whole lot of white man yelling today.
Yes, it was.
The Dems were just boom, 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 lay out the arguments in a lawyerly fashion, and I think they planned their steps because. Where one left off, the other took it up and then took it a little bit farther. But, man, that was like the Republicans were just all over the damn place.
Yeah, but they weren't that bad compared to other hearings. I feel like there was some sort of an agreement that was struck between Nadler and Collins, because they did not really, throw out those points of whatever they are, those, they could have been more disruptive.
Mr. Chairman, parliamentary inquiry?
Yeah, the parliamentary inquiries, points of order.
Will the gentlelady yield?
Right, there was very few, if any, of those, and I feel, my sense is they struck some kind of deal, like, minimize the points of order or no points of order, and we'll let somebody like a crazy fuck like Louis Gohmert go off.
Yeah, but I noticed that when the time was up, they were pretty strict about the time was up, and they were very curt with the Gohmerts and the Gatzes and who was it, Lesko? Lesko, they cut off asked.
Oh, you mean the lady?
Answer my question.
You mean the lady with the $50 cable bill?
She outright complained that Mueller used Washington Post more than Fox News.
Because
they refused to let Mueller answer her question.
Well, yeah, I love the way that Kitty ends her note. She says, periodic reminders to the maggots that Mueller is not exactly a Bernie bro would have been helpful, in my honest opinion.
Mueller did stop her up, though. He threw her. He did get her, because she was like, oh, well, she didn't seem like he threw her off her game.
With the indulgence of the women in the room, can I indulge in some cattiness?
Yes.
About the appearance of a woman.
Go for it.
About the appearance of a woman.
Yes.
God.
Poor Martha Roby of Montgomery, Alabama, came dressed as Scout from To Kill a Mockingbird. Everything but
Wait
the fucking overalls. Hold on. I've been given a dispensation to talk about a woman's appearance, and I'm not throwing this the fuck away. So she showed Martha Roby, who considers herself a legal genius. That means she has been previously embarrassed in other hearings.
I think during the 11 hours of testimony, Hillary Clinton ate her lunch, wadded up the brown paper bag, and shoved it up her ass. That's one that comes to mind. But she showed up for the hearing, not wearing it. She showed up for the hearing in the dress that's in the outfit that Scout wore the first day of first grade. It wasn't the overalls. But,
oh my God!
But it all fell apart because apparently last night she let her best her best girlfriend get all liquored up and cut her hair with a weed eater.
And her little eyes.
I don't know who did the makeup, but her little eyes just looked like these little black baby doll beady eyes. And
yeah, there's a certain way of not doing the eyeliner to yeah.
Well, like, don't stick it directly in your eye.
That's like that doll movie.
I try to refrain from being catty,
like,
but she's
growing out of his head because he didn't brush his hair.
Yeah, I try to refrain from that kind of cattiness, but goddamn, sometimes it's unavoidable, and it's not like she didn't earn it.
Yeah, they got it coming to them anyway, right?
Really? Oh yeah.
They're gonna get up and perform the way they performed, man. I mean, that was holy mother.
Who's the douchebag on the far right? Oh God!
You talking about Ratcliffe? You talking about Ratcliffe?
Ratcliffe looks like a rat. You know? No, I'm talking about the other guy at the far right. He was one of the last Republicans to.
Which session? Morning or afternoon?
Morning. With the glasses, the small glasses, he was really trying to trip Robert Mueller up. Like, I think that, like for example, Doug Collins said he wasn't going to talk fast, and he did.
He talked like, man, he had 60 cups of espresso before he went on.
Right, but I wouldn't give him that kind of credit. And I'm wondering if you think about, Megan, I wouldn't give him that credit because he said, oh, I'm not going to talk fast because, you know, and I'm wondering if that was one of the requirements that Mueller's team said, don't talk fast. And he did. He went and he kept, he was talking at a high speed and Mueller could not really follow him. But it was the guy on the far right. He's a younger, he's fairly young. And he really
kind of chubby faced, kind of young.
He's young. I don't know if
Jim Shorts Jordan, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Not Jordan. Somebody else. Jordan actually, I don't know. He wasn't that effective in terms of.
I think somebody made a remark on Twitter about Jordan saying, I'm so glad Jim Jordan testified. Was he sworn in before he testified? Because that's pretty much what he did.
Let's see.
There was a guy in the beginning that didn't brush his hair, and he looked like a Klingon from Star Trek. Or somebody's trying to put the Klingon makeup on him.
Was he wearing a red shirt, Megan?
No, unfortunately, wasn't.
I'm fine. Okay. Sure,
yeah, I did. I thought I heard off mic a couple of times somebody yelling, "Patah!" That's my Klingon language joke.
I have a media question. Did anybody watch C-SPAN?
I didn't. I was scared to death they would cut away to some Washington Journal, and I'd have to go out and eat dirt and run rabbits.
What they did here was it was on C-SPAN 1, and then they cut to C-SPAN 3 about halfway through the first morning or in the morning. I thought that was kind of odd that they went all the way. You know, you had to go up the channel 100 stations to get to it, so it was kind of odd here anyway. But I just wondered if anybody else had that happen to them or whatever.
No, I had to pipe mine to Roku, so I had to go through the Roku channels to get CNN and MSNBC.
All right, Getz was an asshole. Klein was an asshole. Stubbe was an asshole. And I'm trying to find the other guy. Was it Mike Johnson from Louisiana? His photo looks better than he actually really looks. I think it was Mike Johnson.
Thanks, sweet baby Jesus, for airbrushes.
Who was a dude that brought the law books and just banged them on the table?
Say that again.
Is that that guy?
Who was the guy that was arguing literally the definition of exonerate and used the law books and hauled them out and say, these are from your law school, Mr. Mueller, and bam, right in the table. And he's arguing over, parsing over the definition of exonerate. And I was like, son, I don't know how you graduated school, period.
It was
like, I felt like I was back with Bill Clinton arguing over the word B.
Ken Buck from Colorado, maybe?
May have been Buck.
I think it was Buck.
Inadvertently said that he could, Trump could be indicted after getting out of office. So people are just laughing at him on Twitter.
Yeah, that's right.
It was
one
Ken.
Question too many.
By the way, note coming in from Matt in San Francisco. coming in on the on what I, my scurrilous assault on Martha Roby. Subject line, they. Bob, those are some of the reasons that every woman needs to have a drag queen friend who will give her tips on how to properly present herself in public. But you see, no self-respecting drag queen would help Martha Roby. You know, because she got family values. So instead, she winds up way too late with her best girlfriend and a bottle of Skinny Girl vodka and a Poulan electric weed eater. Oh, honey, your hair is going to look great tomorrow, and you can wear your scout dress.
I don't know, as a woman, and I love drag queens, I usually just give up and say I can't compete. And don't bother with makeup or anything else like that. Just saying.
But she was awful. You know, I guess it's because the Republicans are who the Republicans are. They don't have much of a bench in the way of the double X chromosome crowd.
Well, yeah. Was it the ranking member in the second session had nothing? Who was that?
About Nunes?
Yeah,
Nunes,
yeah.
Nunes was straight nuts, too.
Well, he is, but the members were, yielding their time to him. And he had nothing to go with. He had nothing to take up that excess time that they were giving him. So they clearly weren't very prepared.
Yeah, he yielded. No, they kept.
They kept yielding back.
They
kept yielding back to him, and he'd say things like,
"He was trying to ask questions about the Steele dossier," and Mueller basically reiterated, "I'm not answering that." And then he kind of like resigned in frustration because I felt like that's where the bullets were loaded in the gun. And when Mueller pointedly refused to answer it, it was like, oh crap, what do we have now?
Yeah, well, no backup.
And I think one of the good things is that I think the Democrats were coordinated for once in terms of their questioning and everything. Didn't you get that sense, Rick? I did.
I definitely did. They were downright regimented.
Kind of complimented one another. It was kind of like a natural progression when they started asking questions, you know?
So they obviously
met and discussed what questions they were going to ask about what portions of the report. And, you know, I'll do this and then you'll do that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Kind of like, you know, kind of like putting together a case where you have, you know, you decide the order of proof that it's the story you're going to tell ahead of time. You know, you don't just wing it, you know?
Yeah, and they...
Yeah, it looks like they did a complete rundown. They look very, very prepared. The Republicans did not. The Republicans, it looked like all their preparatory material was from Fox News and from the fucking Orange Monster, you know? I mean, that was all their prep material was from them, which is all bullshit.
And they requested that additional week because Mueller was supposed to testify, I think, on the 17th. And they requested that additional week, and Mueller's team, or Mueller himself, seemed to willingly grant that additional week, making it kind of ambiguous as to who really needed that additional week. Maybe both sides did, so that they could further hone their questioning on the Democrat side, and maybe Mueller wanted the extra week to prepare.
That could be, yeah.
Well, it's so amazing how Trump comes out and just does a complete 180 bizarro spin on the whole thing. I was saying Democrats fell on their face and the Republicans came out glorious in this.
Well, a classic example of that today. Nitwit Nero walks out and says, Mueller didn't have the right to exonerate. You know, it's very interesting. People mentioned exoneration. That was something where he totally folded because he never had the right to exonerate. It was covered very well by Congressman Turner and put to a conclusion.
Well, you know, it could even be said that the way they handled the spin is very instructive as well, because I was watching C-SPAN when they had the microphones up for committee members to come out and give the spin. No Democrats came out and gave that spin. The Republicans were spinning constantly after the hearings, like Jordan and all of them, but it sounded like they were coordinated not only with how they were asking the questions during the hearings, but it sounded like with what Bob was playing at the beginning of his show, they were very coordinated in terms of how they handled the spin afterwards with Nancy Pelosi, Schiff, and Nadler. They're very coordinated with this, which is actually kind of heartening to see that.
Meanwhile, I had a hunch. Meanwhile, over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda's website,
oh, geez.
Reading left to right down the center column, the sixth biggest story on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is, here's how that In-N-Out burger ended up on the street in New York City.
What?
That's
what? Hilarious. Yep. Why does it not surprise me?
That is fucking important shit, you know, I tell you.
Oh, boy. Yeah, talk about deflection. Oh, man. Yeah.
Well, they're just going to have to. They're going to have to say this is a nothing burger.
They're kind of like the National Enquirer of TV networks, aren't they?
No, they're the Weekly World News.
Oh, there you go.
Robin the Bat Boy, found in West Virginia.
How is Bat Boy doing these days? That's what I want to know.
Well, he's hiding out with Mothman and the Braxton County Monster. We're crawling with him here. But to be honest, what I was looking for is Julius Geezer's Clavering Rally, and it's not. There's no link at Fox.
Mm. Yeah, well, they threw him off by a week because he had a plan for the 17th. They threw him off.
Isn't he on his way to West Virginia now?
No, he left this afternoon at 3:30. It probably started 17 minutes ago.
Oh, okay. But there's no nothing to drag out the maggots. No maggot bait.
I
guess they were short of rotting flesh there, Chris.
Not even Fox is covering Trump's maggot.
Unless they're covering it from Tucker Carlson.
Now that would say a
that,
lot.
That could be it.
That would be a big signal, I would say.
But I mean, I don't see anything. Oh my Jesus! You know, no. So, all right.
Yeah, Trump did give reporters, because I had to mute it.
CBS News got a YouTube up.
YouTube. Thanks, Sparky.
CBS. And it's 21 minutes and 43 seconds.
What is Sparky?
The MAGA rally today.
Oh. No,
that's the wrong one. It's the wrong date. Wait a minute.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I don't think he didn't plan it. They didn't plan it. Interesting.
Maybe we already missed it. No, it's on, they said it was on Fox, but.
So there is one.
Let's see. But it started an hour ago, apparently.
Oh, so he did, in fact, have one today.
Well, I guess, yeah, it well, but no, if it started at 7, this thing's showing 154.14 for length. No, that's September 29th,
2018. Yeah, I know, I got the wrong one, but...
It threw it off. It got thrown off.
The schedule
shows he left Wheeling, West Virginia at 7:50.
Well, maybe it was early. Left Wheeling, Sparky?
That's what the schedule said, I see. The President Trump's schedule.
Huh.
It's supposedly, you know, schedule.
The maggots weren't even out of work yet when he had the rally.
He was supposed to have gotten there at 6 p.m.
Well, what's particularly interesting is that, and this is another West Virginia angle, I mentioned it on my Twitter feed last night, right here in the county where I live, we have 40,000 scouts right now. The World Scouting Jamboree is being held at that toxic waste site they turned into a scout camp. And it's scouts from all over the world. You know, 2 years ago, they had the National Jamboree, and Trump showed up and completely embarrassed the scouts. You know, with his, swearing at him and talking about, you know, I had hot women. You'll have hot women. And
did he get a badge for that? Did he get a badge for being a porn star?
He got his porn star, his porn star badge. Wait a minute. But the funny thing is, they're back, and this is the worldwide jamboree, not just the national one. They haven't invited him. Now, maybe I annoyed the universe by tweeting that last night. But this is the international. You know, this is scouts from shithole countries. Not just the United States, Scotland, and Norway.
Bob, is it possible he's going to crash the jamboree?
Oh Trump? God!
He may just crash the jamboree.
Well, I told Bob to watch out for the naked ramblings he's been predicting all along, because tonight would be the night to do it.
They're coming.
If he wants to distract the MSM.
It was a double depend. Like I said, it was a double depends morning for executive time.
There were a couple tweets that some of my friends put on Facebook that I literally commented, why do I get the feeling that this was typed out as he was sitting on the John straining to get one out?
Yeah, what's he going to rub together to try to start a fire at the Boy Scout camp?
Oh, it's a private fundraiser.
Oh, it was private, was it, Sparky?
Yeah, that's what I got one article that says. We'll hold a re-election fundraiser at West Banco Arena.
Well, I knew it was at West Banco.
Oh, wait a minute. These are all old. Well, I can't find any links for today.
I'm shocked no one covered it.
Except this link said 4 days ago. And this other one
says... Yeah, I think the news said it was a fundraiser earlier today, if
private.
I remember correctly.
The other link says... President Trump returning to West Virginia for private.
Okay, no cameras, okay. All right.
For private campaign fundraiser.
What, if you're a big donor,
it's private and hosted by Robert Murray, president and CEO of Murray Energy.
No, we all know that guy. He's
Ohio Governor Mike DeWine and West Virginia Speaker House Speaker Roger Hanshaw are expected to show up.
Nothing about Jim Justice?
No, not in this clip. I it's a day old.
So, Bob, if you're a big donor after what happened today, what's going through your skull? Just keep going. I mean,
oh, if I'm a big Trump, no, if I'm a big Trump donor, I'm bought in. I gotta stay bought. Because if you look
Wait
up and go,
Didn't
I got suckered, you're not a business genius anymore.
What was that? I'm sorry.
Didn't the Mercers pull out from backing him at some point?
I don't know if that's true. I don't recall hearing that. That would be big. That would be a big deal.
So I thought I heard that at some point earlier in the year.
Do the Cokes still give him money? Cokes don't like him, right?
They could be. I don't know. I thought the Mercers had just stopped because Trump didn't deliver on what they had. They struck a deal on for them to back him in 2016.
Well, because he didn't deliver on blowing up Obamacare?
That could be it. I can't remember where I heard that.
It just
came to mind. When you were asking about what would it take to stop backing him.
I bet you the Cokes are going to funnel most of their money to the down ticket, right? Senate seats, House.
Well, they kind of have to because they may be rich enough to burn a herd of sopping wet elephants with sopping wet $100 bills, but they got 20 Senate seats to defend.
They do.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to spend a lot of money in Alabama, of all places, and Kentucky.
Well, it kind of depends on how the Alabama primary goes, because remember, we've got Roy Tola Moore squaring off against the Attorney General of Alabama, who just wishes we could go back to a time when everything was black and white, as in Leave It to Beaver and Bonanza. And so that'll be pretty interesting.
And separate water fountains, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, match.
Wait a minute. Roy Moore is attempting for a Senate seat again.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Good. Do it. Go. Go, Roy.
Is Jeff Sessions trying to get back in?
Not that I heard.
I thought there was something about that he was going to try to run again.
They're probably trying to draft him, the Republican Party, I would think, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know if he's interested. You'd think he would be.
He should be the next RNC chair.
Don't give them any ideas. Come on.
He was brought up quite a bit today.
Yeah, it didn't. Didn't the Trump's temper tantrums over Sessions recusing himself get brought up a lot?
Yes, yeah. And they should have. Yes.
No, I mean that. Like I heard that they were going over the report about how Trump was berating Sessions and they pointedly asked Mueller, is the AG supposed to protect the president or the United States? And he said the United States.
Yeah, yeah. That.
So there were some pointed remarks.
That Don McGahn was brought up quite a bit, too.
Yeah, I think Don McGahn's going to get subpoenaed next, if you want to know the truth.
He already has been.
He already has been?
Yeah, he's defied the subpoena. So I think they're litigating that in court, right, Bob?
And it's probably, in terms of timing, the earliest he might possibly testify is probably what I heard today is like September.
Yeah.
But sadly, September's only 2 months. It's a month away.
Yeah.
How about Wilbur? Yep. Anybody know when he's supposed to show up?
Who?
Oh dear God,
Wilbur.
Oh,
you Wilbur.
Wilbur Ross.
The dude that looks like he's
already dead. Yeah.
He's like several years past his expiration date, I think, you know?
Oh, my God. Where skin is just attached to the bone and there's nothing in between.
Oh, God.
Well, he's run out of coal miners to suck the blood out of.
He looks like that vampire dude in the Evolution Underworld series.
Well, I mean, you got to remember he owned a coal company that ran a mine called Sago. And they, of course, they ran it shitty and non-union, and it blew up and killed 12 people. And they immediately ran out and said, "Know what? We figured out what it was. Lightning. It was lightning. Lightning stuck the mountain, and the lightning went all the way into the coal mine and blew up methane gas and killed them miners. We didn't have nothing to do with it." Sleazy fucks. Right.
Jeez.
Murderous.
God. Yeah, I think after this, it's just going to be a parade of people testifying, honestly.
Or pleading the fifth, right? Going up there and saying, or saying what Mueller did say a lot today, which was, "I can't answer that question." And he said that at least half the time, didn't he?
Well, he kind of said it in relation to the Republicans were hashing the Steele dossier, and the man basically said at the beginning of each hearing, "I'm not going to be answering questions about that." And the Republicans seemed to be both hard of hearing and unable to comprehend simple sentences because they kept rehashing it, and he had to keep saying over and over again, "No, I'm not going to answer that."
Yeah, he would say something, I can't remember, it was a variation on "I can't support that" or whatever, but he...
"Oh, I can't support your view on of whatever you were..." Yeah. "Of his report, yeah."
But he would say, "That doesn't..." One time he said, "That doesn't mean it isn't true."
Yeah,
something
right.
Like that. In other words, he was differential. Like he's saying, "I as special counsel can't, you know, maybe that's part of that willful ignorance thing." So he looks like he's completely neutral. But
I don't know. He clapped back against one guy who basically accused him of being biased, and he said, "You'll never read a more fair report than the one in front of you," and that's when they call time.
I think that's true. I think he tried to make it as apolitical as possible. And that doesn't mean, you know, that certainly doesn't mean we like the end result. But I think that was his end. And
like, I think he just got pushed too far at times. And I think he was clapping back a lot more as it went on. Like he was trying to keep his cool and be, you know, patient, but then... When they got his ire up when they accused him of hiring people based on their politics.
Oh, and
he really
yeah.
went
that was
on that.
Yeah, highly off. Protective of his people, as they are protective of him.
Yep.
But I think he did a good job diffusing the whole idea that it was somehow biased, because he said, "I've never asked the political affiliation. You can't really consider the political affiliation." And I think it's interesting, though, that if you do look at the political affiliation, most of them are Democrats, which is interesting.
Well, he gave him a good drubbing about that, because I think he actually spanked them on that. Like, "No, I don't hire people based on their politics. I hire them based on their ability." Like,
correct.
Whoa.
Correct. But if you look at it, most of them are Democrats. Right,
Was that just another attempt for him to look like he was unbiased, or he was trying to make it
yes,
balanced?
Absolutely. I think that's his whole objective, is to be as apolitical. He's always said that, even when he was younger. He said, "I am aggressively apolitical." Whether or not that's true, he certainly has tried to present himself that way.
I think that's right, and I think he's absolutely disgusted that Trump is president. Also,
uh-huh.
I mean, you can pull both
that, and that he was disgusted with Barr presenting his report the way he did. I think,
yes,
it's kept under wraps, but I think he was absolutely disgusted by that.
Oh, there's no question about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think his report is apolitical.
Yeah,
And because, like I said, he's being a lawyer. He's pissing everybody off. Like when I was practicing law, I remember, as you know, especially like in divorce law or whatever, it's like as long as both sides in a divorce case walk away unhappy, then you know you've done your job.
Is that a rule?
No, that's the absolute truth. And when you if you're negotiating a settlement to a personal injury, if neither side is completely happy, you've done your job.
And that's what I think.
Wow.
That's what I think guides Robert Mueller. I think that's what guides him in the hearings today.
I mean, if you've got a car wreck case and the plaintiff comes away thinking I didn't get enough money, and the insurance company comes away thinking I paid too much, win.
You've done your job. You have done your job.
Makes a lot.
Yep. It's fascinating, but that's, yeah, absolutely. So where do you think this is going to end up, Bob? What do you think is the next step? After the big Mueller-palooza today, what direction do you think this is going to go?
Well, I think I'm going to sleep for 12 hours.
Yeah, I only got 5 hours sleep last night, and then I woke up 7.
But realistic.
I woke up, had to take coffee, and
I mean, it's going to be what now? It's going to be next. All of the hearings. All of the court cases on the subpoenas.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And what I've said all along is the minute that those start going final, and remember, they don't necessarily have to go final by being ruled upon by the Supreme Court. The case law could be so clear, and it kind of is, that the Supreme Court, it gets through the appeals court, he loses at the appellate level, they file for cert with the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court says, fuck off. There's nothing new there's nothing new to decide here. Congress has the right to issue subpoenas and has the right to expect that their subpoenas will be honored.
True.
And so that would shorten the process considerably. And I'm not willing to, and I do grow tired of seeing people on social media channeling their inner Speaker of the House.
What do you mean, Bob?
I mean, they ain't got one. They've never been Speaker. Most of them have never been to Washington, D.C. The ones who have been to Washington, D.C. have gotten no closer to the Capitol than the tour of the Capitol Museum underneath the building. They've seen the rotunda, and for some reason or another, that makes them fucking Rayburn, okay? Or Uncle Joe Cannon.
I don't know if it's because I grew up in the D.C. metro area, but it's like I keep trying to tell people there's a process, and people are like, well, why can't they just do this? And I'm like, because legally they can't, and there's a whole lot more to the story, and it's just not getting through.
So I'm not willing to supplant my judgment for her strategic vision. You know, I'd like to get it started. I want to see Donald Trump. I mean, this is never going to happen under any circumstance, but a guy can fantasize. I want to see him sitting at the same table Mueller was at, answering questions, and I want to watch him melt like a snowball in hell.
That was one part that really bothered me.
Me too.
That people were upset that Mueller caved on interviewing Trump, and he said it was because they needed to expedite the case, and some people said, oh, he was going to fight it, and I was like, Trump's lawyers were fighting it because they knew the man couldn't answer any question without lying, and then he'd be clapped for perjury.
I think he did a good job handling that question. I agree with Megan. I think Mueller handled that question pretty well.
Well, I think he knew with every passing day he was getting nearer and nearer to getting fired, and that meant no report came out at all.
Right.
That's an interesting take.
Or else he gets fired, and then the report comes out, and it's written in crayon, and it says, Donald Trump didn't do nothing wrong. Signed, Donald Trump.
Well, Bob, you know what, Bob? I want to ask you this question, though, because how did the media get that so wrong then? because the media kept saying that no, there was no way that Trump could actually directly fire Mueller. He would have to go through Rod Rosenstein. But Mueller's team, and there's reports that have come out, and clearly based on, you can infer from what Mueller testified to today, that they actually felt that, yeah, Trump could actually directly fire him, but with cause. So how, what is the disconnect there? How do they get that so wrong? Do you know? I mean, I think
they like to, they like to stoke controversy, and they like to generate water cooler discussion, and that probably was probably better for doing that. That's a very cynical position for me to take, but I'm very cynical toward the multimillionaire for-profit media, as we all know.
MSNBC.
But what I was getting at earlier about not supplanting my judgment for Nancy Pelosi's, I don't know which is better or worse from a political standpoint in terms of, do you really want to be going through impeachment hearings in a presidential election year? And so that's, you know, that's the problem with my theory, that you've got to get some finality on these court cases. And there's a brand new one out there. I don't know if you noticed this or not, but with the passage of the statute in New York that gives ways and means access to the tax returns of New York citizens, state tax returns, well, Trump has filed a preemptive lawsuit against the Congress and against the against Congress and the state of New York over that statute, because the way the way they crafted the statute, the target of the investigation doesn't get to say no, I object, and so they're saying that deprives him of due process and punishes him for exercising his First Amendment rights and, you know, any number of silly pieces of shit legal theories. But, you know, they bill $10,000 an hour, and at $10,000 an hour, you'll say all manner of silly shit.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob, I have a question. Okay, the woman that just released the book with the latest sexual assault of the, you know, the Trump monster.
Yeah.
E. Jean Carroll?
Yeah, is there any possibility that she could file a defamation suit against him because he basically came out and said she's lying, right?
You know, you can, but if you're a public figure and she is, you're up against both, you're up against the line of cases from New York Times versus Sullivan all the way to Falwell v. Hustler, and that makes it very difficult to prevail in a defamation suit when you're a public figure. The caveat that goes with that is that while there is a predetermined preference in favor of summary judgment, ultimately the question is the question of whether defamation occurred is a jury question. And so if you can come up with a legitimate issue of genuine fact or law, then you survive summary judgment.
Well, it hurt her livelihood because she's trying to sell this book. And if he's coming out and his sycophants, you know, Kellyanne and the whole gang, the Flying Monkey Parade, if they're all discrediting her and her book, that's obviously, that could dampen sales and hurt her livelihood. And, right?
I would never take that into a courtroom.
No, you wouldn't?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
I move to rename the Trump administration the Flying Monkey Parade.
So Bob, so if you're saying then, like, you know, going back to my question about where do we go from here, if you're saying that, do you really want to be doing an impeachment hearing, you know, during a presidential campaign, then what is the next step? Is it just to continue to hold hearings to educate the public about what Trump is doing, and not?
I think that could be the strategic plan.
It gives me the fantods to even contemplate this. But if you're sitting down there and field marshaling this whole thing, you field marshal the good out, the good potential outcomes and the bad ones. And one of those bad outcomes is that they retain the House, maybe take the Senate, and he gets reelected president.
Ew. No thanks.
You gotta do it all. You gotta take it all.
Well, no, you don't, I mean, you don't have to do it all over again. It's not like these are bills. They don't have to be reintroduced. But no. if that happens, then you're really in Nixon country.
No, I'm saying we need to take the House. We need to further solidify our control over the House, completely take the Senate and the presidency.
And here's the problem with that.
Okay.
The one reason if I was
Ray of Sunshine.
Yeah, that's me, Little Ray of Fucking Sunshine. if I was a sitting member of the House who has to run every two miserable years, the one thing, I mean, it's just a reality that nothing gets done in an election year. I mean, that's why we're pushing the AIC Act as hard as we are. This is not an election year. There's a chance to get something done. And if I'm a sitting member of Congress, Republican or Democrat, I don't want to be trapped in goddamned impeachment hearings during an election year, because that makes it easier for whoever's challenging me. Because it's harder for me to be out on the campaign trail.
Great point. I bet you Nancy's thinking about that big time.
Yeah,
I'm wondering if Nancy's strategy is just to get them a slow death by doing the court thing and the subpoena thing and dragging them through more hearings, because then they got control over that.
Just paint them all as goddamn fucking liars. That's what they are.
No, I think we saw the beginning of something with the afternoon hearing today. And that was Adam Schiff driving the word disloyal, 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 unpatriotic.
And Mueller was...
Notice he avoided the use of the word treason.
Well, that's because it's completely, wholly, and totally inapplicable.
Yeah, Schiff is pretty good. He's serious. He's intelligent. He's,
He represents my district. I love the guy.
You go.
Oh, he was.
Well, when I watched him today, I was double proud, because the very day we introduced the AIC Act, you know, that man, as busy as he is, took time out and said, "Hell yeah, I'm signing on."
Cool.
Wow. Yep.
And
Nadler and Schiff at the beginning of each hearing really nailed it.
Well, one of the things that struck me is that, you know, he's been on TV a bunch, Schiff has. And he comes across as informed, but he's also sort of, well, you know, easygoing. But man, when he was sitting there in that chairman's seat, he was 200 proof business. And he had his prosecuting hat on, and it was like a Zen haiku poet. There was not a syllable wasted.
No.
Nope. Nope.
And one of the things I'm going to do this evening, and others might want to quit telling us what to do this evening, Bob, is I'm going to try to find a transcript of Adam Schiff's closing remarks, because,
yes, please,
because that was a piece of, I mean, it was literally world class oratory.
Yes,
and it wasn't a bunch of pablum horse shit about aspirational stuff, which has its place. It was the deadly in earnest serious business of whether or not we want to continue to be a self-governing republic based upon democratic principles.
Yep.
And I mean, I think it would, I think in the long run, it would stand up with, some of Lincoln's remarks.
Yeah, or Kennedy, Ted Kennedy's remarks, when he says, what's his famous words, how much is enough? What's his famous? He had a great speech on the floor, denigrating obviously the powerful, the oligarchy, and everything.
says, how much is enough, or something like that. I think that this speech today for Schiff might be in that same realm, right, in the annals of history.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a sound clip played in schools later on.
I think that's absolutely right.
Well, he did that beautiful speech a few months ago where he kept repeating, like he would say, oh, and so, oh gosh, I can't remember how he did it, but where
is
he
that was, when he was dressing down his Republican colleagues, saying, you may think it's okay this, but I don't. I
do not. Yeah, it's like kind of like an anaphora. He kept saying that over and over again, like, but I do not.
That was gorgeous.
That was incredible how he just, and he, you know, where he laid it out like succinctly what Trump is doing and would say that this is, you know, essentially this isn't right, you know, and he just kept repeating that same phrase. Mm-hmm. I do not, that this is not right. Yeah, he's.
Well, you notice when he did that, his Republican colleagues just all shut the hell up, which I thought was like a superpower in and of itself.
And so he did sort of the same, like what Bob's talking about at the end today, he did the same kind of thing. And the fact that Mueller did not say anything or did not have the opportunity to say anything almost kind of implied that he was in agreement, which is beautiful, whether or not he was. It sort of implied that.
Well, there's some of that silence is acceptance going on there.
Exactly.
I got another note coming in from Lady B. Dems. Mr. Mueller, is there any way you can be more definitive about the findings in your report? We're worried you may be coming across to the public as hedging and you're not making your misgivings about Trump completely clear. Republicans. Mueller, you're a confused, doddering old man who hates America. Fuck you. This is a waste of time. Fox News. Bob Mueller has it out for Trump and suffers from dementia. Lady B observes, the average middle-class white woman. My God, why can't they just, like, shut up about Trump already? If he'd done anything wrong, he'd be impeached by now. Is this going to affect our tax refund again? Turn back to The View so I can laugh with Whoopi and Joy. Lady B observes, it's called dictating the narrative. We do well to learn it. Meanwhile, because we need a giggle as we move toward the end of the program, we haven't talked much about the rise of Boris Johnson. Boris the Spider.
Oh, God. I prayed on both sides of the pond. It's now going to become a competition.
Well, Lady B says, finally, we have achieved parity with the Brits in the culture wars. Morons have taken over their country, too. So much for the superiority of Western culture. And sends a Twitter post of a fake Wikipedia entry created by a Brit who despises Boris. It reads as following. Boris Johnson, real name Alexander Boris de Pfeffel Johnson, because fuck it, just look at the idiot, was elected to the UK Parliament by the fucking idiots of Uxbridge and South Ruislip. Johnson's fan base is the upper middle classes who find his racism and ineptitude charming instead of fucking terrifying that someone this evil and manipulative can go so far with so little. Johnson is famous for being fucking awful at everything, ruining the country and being the epitome of posh boy, oh ha ha, look at him, he's harmless, look at his hair, whilst actually being everything wrong with Britain at once. Also, he looks like a medicine ball made out of gammon and thrown into a hay bale. Quick fact, Boris Johnson can fuck off into a bin and then fuck off a bit more. I had to mute the mic.
Well, Lady B, you need a regular column.
Yeah, I had to mute the mic the first time I read that. I was giggling merrily about 5 minutes ago. Yes, Sparky?
I put a YouTube video of Adam Schiff's closing statement in the Skype chat.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Let's see here. Let me see if I can find it. Okay. It doesn't take that long. Let's roll this. Just,
I think I heard you.
Wait, that's the wrong channel. Let me make that noise go away. Well, wasn't that, I don't think.
but I don't need that channel. Anywho. Yeah, so here's the closing statement by Adam Schiff. Working. Someday.
Dr. Marlowe, let me close by returning to where I began. Thank you for your service, and thank you for leading this investigation. The facts you set out in your report and have elucidated here today tell a disturbing tale of a massive Russian intervention in our election, of a campaign so eager to win, so driven by greed that it was willing to accept the help of a hostile foreign power in a presidential election decided by a handful of votes in a few key states. Your work tells of a campaign so determined to conceal their corrupt use of foreign help that they risk going to jail by lying to you, to the FBI, and to Congress about it, and indeed, some have gone to jail over such lies. And your work speaks of a president who committed countless acts of obstruction of justice that, in my opinion, and that of many other prosecutors, anyone else in the country, they would have been indicted. Notwithstanding the many things you have addressed today and in your
report, some questions that from
you
Sparky?
Could not answer given the constraints operating
on YouTube.
Yeah, it was probably already.
But for the OLC opinion that you could not. And so the Justice Department,
because
you know that whole hearing is going to be up already.
Because it went into the chat, into the Skype chat, it's coming through the channel we're all on. So if I'm playing it, we can't be talking over it. Okay. It's just a few minutes. Stand by. Thanks.
We'll have to make that decision when the president leaves office, both as to the crime of obstruction of justice, and as to the campaign finance fraud scheme. That individual one directed and coordinated and for which Michael Cohen went to jail. You would not tell us whether the president should be impeached, nor did we ask you, since it is our responsibility to determine the proper remedy for the conduct outlined in your report. Whether we decide to impeach the president in the House or we do not, we must take any action necessary to protect the country while he is in office. You would not tell us results or whether other bodies looked into Russian compromise in the form of money laundering, so we must do so. You would not tell us whether the counterintelligence investigation revealed whether people still serving within the administration pose a risk of compromise and should never have been given a security clearance, so we must find out. We did not bother to ask whether financial inducements from any Gulf nations were influencing U.S. policy, since it is outside the four corners of your report, and so we must find out. But one thing is clear from your report, your testimony from Director Ray's statements yesterday, the Russians massively intervened in 2016, and they are prepared to do so again in voting that is set to begin a mere 8 months from now. The president seems to welcome the help again, and so we must make all efforts to harden our elections infrastructure, to ensure there is a paper trail for all voting, to deter the Russians from meddling, to discover it when they do, to disrupt it, and to make them pay. Protecting the sanctity of our elections begins, however, with the recognition that accepting foreign help is disloyal to our country, unethical, and wrong. We cannot control what the Russians do, not completely, but we can decide what we do. And that this centuries-old experiment we call American democracy is worth cherishing. Director Mueller, thank you again for being here today. And before I adjourn, I would like to excuse you and Mr. Zebley.
And that's it. And that was one of the other, To Kill a Mockingbird moments.
I didn't hear it.
Well,
I didn't hear it.
You couldn't because it was being played through the same, but it went out. But it went out to the broadcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Got it.
You know what? Hey, Bob, I remember, when will the greed stop? That was Ted Kennedy's famous phrase. When will the greed stop?
I always feel like that that movie with starring Michael Douglas, where he said greed is good. I always felt like that was a turning point in our culture that basically sanctioned greed.
Yes, me.
Oh, that was the go-go age. That was the, you know, make as much money as you can, grab it while you can, and yeah. You know, fuck everyone else. I've got mine. F you.
It turned a we society into a me society. That's exactly right. Reagan. That was 1980.
Yep. I think that movie just sanctioned it. And...
Well, I think that movie was sort of a critique of what had already happened in the society or had already started to happen, you know?
Well, if that's the case, then why did Michael Douglas say that he doesn't regret doing that movie? You know, I felt like he was saying it was okay. But maybe you could be right, Rick. I mean,
I think it was a great movie.
Bad guy or good guy?
He nailed that Gordon Gekko character just like to a T, you know?
Yes.
And I think it was based on like Michael Milken and those guys, you know? Yeah. The Raiders, you know?
It was.
Yeah.
Depending on your vantage point, or is he a good guy or a bad guy?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
If you
were an 80s asshole, he was a good guy.
Right.
If you had a nickel's worth of morals, he was a bad guy.
And the irony is, the 80s assholes were like, a lot of them were former hippies in the 60s. Like, what sense does that make, you know?
Yeah,
they sold out their products.
Well, they came down from the acid and discovered capitalism.
There you go. Right.
Yeah, speaking of hippies... Speaking of hippies, what was going on with that dude that was protesting at the just before when Mueller was...
Yeah, what the hell was that about?
He was screaming about
Manafort.
Manafort and Gates, that they were communicating or something through some sort of encrypted texting or something that he seems to know about that nobody else knows about.
Like WhatsApp?
It was something about
WhatsApp.
It was about encrypted communications. I got to look it up, but encrypted communications.
Yeah, I didn't catch it.
Sounds weird, though.
They were encrypted communications with Russia.
Hmm.
During the Trump Tower meeting.
Oh.
Well, I think I think there was a lot of encrypted communications that, you know, we haven't become privy to that because that would reveal sources and methods of intelligence gathering.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot that we don't know.
If you want to be taken seriously, then I don't think you should look like that.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, and screaming at the top of your eye, whatever. But
oh, well.
One thing I think we've heard about is Ivanka and Jared. And, you know, the heat, they should be bringing the heat on those guys, too. I mean, there's plenty of nefarious horseshit with them, and they should be brought to bear, you know. Let's haul their asses up in front of committee.
Yeah, it would have been nice if somebody had brought up to Mueller the whole thing about ignorance of the law is no excuse concerning Donald Trump Jr.
Even though he was deemed too stupid to commit conspiracy or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, that's a new defense I'll use, you know, for sure.
I was going to say, Rick, is that a legal defense?
No, it's not. I'd get laughed out of court.
The defendant in question was too stupid to know what they were doing?
No, well, I guess it works for the president.
If anyone could get away with it, it would be Butthead.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
a friend of mine on Patreon calls him diarrhea face and vomit face.
Oh jeez.
Well, that was another, and we got to get out of here. But that was another one of those moments where Mueller was queried as to whether he sought a subpoena for Butthead, and he said, "I can't get into that."
Uh,
A regular witness or could whether, not get away with saying that, Bob.
Or whether
a regular witness would be forced to answer that question, you know?
Right. Or whether Butthead or Trump ever tried to plead the fifth. Those were a couple of telling little moments. But it's been a rousing conversation. Thanks for all the help. I really, really do appreciate it. You guys were great. And we'll bring it to a close now. Let me thank again everybody who's made it possible for us to have a week of Fundraising Free Radio. Thank you so, so very much. I can scarcely express it. In particular, from last night into today, thanks to our subscribers, and thanks again to. Let me get it opened up here so I don't screw anything up. Thanks again to Larry, and thanks to Charles for some have several shows on me that made it possible to finish the month a day ahead of schedule, and what's more, allowed me to go and pay our monthly whopping disgusting internet bill so that, yes, the horn will survive for another month, because that's how we live, month to month. Thank you. Thank you so very much. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. It is through your determination that this little broadcast effort has lasted a decade and a half, while others have fallen by the wayside. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening in the chat room to Sparky and Steve. And thanks to Sparky for, at the last minute, even with me just deciding on the fly, for moderating the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years, celebrating 20 years this year at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.